Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Monday. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. And you can be part of the show by dialing 312-981-7200. Hi, Wendy. Happy Monday to you and yours.
Is it Super Bowl Monday?
It is not Super Bowl Monday. You know, maybe the adjective super should only be applied after a game. Because this game was not... It was the just okay bowl.
They should have left the Roman numeral L for loser.
For let's take a nap.
It was... just not that exciting, and I really didn't have anything invested in either team. I kind of wanted the Panthers to win because I love Cam.
Yeah.
Cam Newton. I even got his name right this time.
Yes.
But I'm such a flip-flopper that it was really nice to see Peyton Manning walk away with a victory, and just so I could see the owner's wife again talking. Oh, my God.
what are you suggesting?
What's going on with that?
She's fun looking.
She
may have had some work done. That's hard to say. We don't know
for
sure.
Who looks in the mirror and goes, I am rocking it?
Well, I don't know. The person I enjoyed watching the most is Jerry Richardson, who's the owner of the Panthers, who looks like he hasn't smiled in 35 years. They showed him at one point. The team was down by 9, so I understand.
I know the exact shot
there's
you're
a
saying.
Shot of him, that, and they just kept it on him.
In
and
the
I kept
suite.
Thinking,
he's like standing back there, just nothing.
Just going, you could just see it on his face. Now, it's at that point in the game, the team could have come back. They were down by 9, and there was a lot of time left. So there's a lot of emotions you could have, like hope or energy. There's a bunch, but he chose just the most stoic. He's just staring straight ahead.
And he, at some point, knew the camera was on him, didn't he?
I would think so. Even there was a clip, and this is getting a lot of play online today. They showed Eli Manning at one point in his suite, and he looked really unhappy, and that's with his brother's team up by quite a bit toward the end of the game. He looked dejected.
It was just really not that great of a game, and I think it came down to experience. That's really it.
A lot
Cam
of it...
looked, they looked nervous and not put together.
Right. Well, Denver's defense, which is highly touted, it's the best in the NFL, those guys really had a day. I mean, they were all over.
Their offense wasn't so bad either.
No, well...
Yeah, they really... I mean, their offense, what did it score? Didn't score many points.
No.
Still scored. Most points win. Isn't that how it works?
Most points almost always wins in a contest like this, yes. It's so sad because it's the game... You know, you wait 2 weeks. Well, you wait a year for the Super Bowl. And then when it doesn't live up to expectations, you feel a little dejected, don't you? Don't you want to see a nice, exciting, thrilling match? And it just wasn't.
And I had so much hope for the Panthers. I really did. It's like
everyone did.
Just this energetic, enthusiastic, exact opposite of Jay Cutler, quarterback. I mean, it was just something that was exciting.
Jay gets kicked even when he's not playing.
He deserves it.
He
deserves it.
He hasn't been close to a football in a month.
I don't care. The enthusiasm of Cam Newton is contagious.
It is contagious, and yet, are you aware of the post game
crying?
Well, there was a guy who cried. There was a guy who was on the sidelines crying. There was that. There was that. But Cam Newton was at a press conference afterwards where he just did not want to contribute at all.
What is there to say?
Well,
I hate when reporters do that.
Hey, remember what I told you last week?
When
I was with the Bears?
Yeah.
Whenever things were really bad and we had to talk to a guy live postgame, we would go to Ron Rivera.
Because he would help you out. He would give you a quote or two.
And he did it last night. I mean, he was obligated to. But the reporter goes, hey, look, man, I really, really appreciate you coming out and talking to us like this. And he goes, it's part of it. This is part of what we do.
See,
he seems so nice, doesn't he? I feel bad
for
him.
Ron Rivera?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I understood. I watched more of it today. So Cam Newton is there, and the game had just ended, and there's the reporters asking him the questions, which are the obvious questions. Why didn't you guys win? What went wrong? Why didn't you do this?
They scored more points came up in that little contest conversation.
That was asked. He said exactly those words.
With his hoodie up.
With the most points wins. Yeah. So he's been Bieberized. He thought, I'll look cooler if I have my hood up.
Or unibomberized.
But now, do you take the stance of, when a guy is down and out and has just lost the big game, leave him alone? Or do you take the stance of part of your job?
You
make a lot of money.
Got to talk to him.
Spend 15 minutes with the guys. Give them the answers you know they're going to want to know and go home after that. Don't you think?
Yeah, but I mean, it was...
He walked out. He just got up. He goes, that's enough. I'm out.
It's heartbreaking for him. Although, you know, they had greater hopes than abilities in this particular
game.
That's
true. That's very true.
Joe wants to jump in. Happy Super Bowl Monday. How's it going, Joe?
Hi, Bill, Wendy. First, I want to tell you, I'm absolutely a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Going into the Super Bowl, I kind of figured that Denver was going to do exactly what they did to Cam Newton.
Really?
And that is they dominated him from the start of the game to the end of the game. Denver didn't win because of Peyton Manning. Denver won because of their defense. And they destroyed Cam Newton's bubble. I mean, they absolutely destroyed him.
And Peyton Manning said that, too. He thanked the team. He did. He was not gloating. In fact, he seems like just quite the Southern gentleman, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Who looks like a young Fred Gwynn.
But, I mean, I found that game completely exciting because of what that defense was doing. That defense reminded me when the Bears did it in 85. They absolutely dominated New England, and that's exactly what happened yesterday.
They're being compared to that Bears defense. That's how dominant they were all season long, not just in last night's game.
I know.
Doesn't that suck, though, that all we have as a Bears fan is the 85-86 Bears?
Yes.
Well,
that's
I mean,
it.
If you're an actual fan, you'll go with a lot of other stuff, but it's just, I mean, that's how everybody gets compared to.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what we got.
Halftime show, what'd you think, Joe?
You know. Thank you.
Joe, halftime show, what'd you think? Yay or nay?
I didn't watch it because I don't really care for Beyonce. I kind of liked it a little bit, but I didn't really watch all of it. I just didn't care for it.
All right.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, let's do this. There's much more to discuss, and we'll analyze the commercials. Dennis Ryan, ad guru, will be with us later on to talk about the commercials.
I can't wait. Kind of a letdown this year, I got to tell you. A lot of singing animals.
Yeah, there were a lot of singing animals.
The walking colon was great.
I don't think I saw that. I got to look
that
up.
You remember that. You would remember the walking colon.
I got to look it up online.
All right, we'll take
walking colon.
Yeah, yeah. All right, a quick break, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. To the left, it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about the just okay bowl that was held last night in
Not
San Francisco. Wasn't it strange to watch a halftime show in the daylight? We're used to seeing them at night, and it was still light out in San Francisco.
That was very bizarre.
There was a time during the halftime show, for people who missed it, you had Coldplay started out. Then they handed it off to Bruno Mars, and then Beyonce was also involved. There were a lot of multicolored things going on. The people in the stands had very brightly colored, pastel-colored, brightly colored things. There were splotches of paint that were coming up from
Rainbow.
The stage. And my daughter Reese said, I feel like I'm watching a little girl's birthday party, which it actually looked like a lot.
It did, with the flowers.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And what did it spell out? Love is the word. Love is the drug.
Something
Let's
like
love.
That.
It wasn't one love because I that
no.
would be Bob Marley.
I think I'd love a Bronco win.
Something like that. Something like that.
It. You know, I am.
Oh, it's spelled out Budweiser.
How much did Peyton Manning get for saying I'm going to drink a lot of beer tonight? I'm going to drink my Budweiser.
Twice.
Yep.
He got two mentions in.
Going to go kiss my wife, my kids, drink some Budweiser.
We now know he's somehow tied in with the Budweiser people. Does he have a distributorship or two, Steve? Is that what we found out today?
I don't know. I know that Budweiser's denying they paid him to do it.
Oh.
You see, he got a big kiss from Papa John.
Yes,
the Papa
he did.
John guy, too. That
yes,
guy must have been on the sidelines.
Right.
You know?
He was delivering a pizza.
Well, didn't Peyton Manning say when he got his Papa John's in Colorado, the legalization of marijuana has really helped sales?
Yes.
I think he was quoted as saying that.
Yes. How about that?
Good for him. The halftime show, I'm not a big Coldplay fan. I mean, they're okay, but, you want some excitement during the show. And they were better than anticipated.
Yeah. There was a lot of energy.
Thanks to Bruno and Beyonce.
Well, I think the NFL, because first they named Coldplay as your halftime entertainment. And in the past, there's not only always just one band or guy. A lot of times there's a handoff section where somebody else famous is involved. But it almost seemed like they knew they needed to jolt up the show a little bit. So they did. They added Bruno Mars. They added Beyonce. It wasn't a bad half hour. It was entertaining.
But they had to also add a best of reel from previous performance.
Yeah.
That's sad for Coldplay.
I don't know if that was more, I don't know if that was a knock on Coldplay or them realizing we've had some pretty A-listers,
so
pretty big
Coldplay?
A-listers.
It was a 50th, right?
Oh, yeah. All right.
So you have to pay tribute
Bertrand
to the past.
For the steal.
Don't you?
Did you guys notice the guy whooping?
Yes. During Beyonce?
During the whole game.
The game,
yeah,
yes.
Sharon noticed it about into the second half, I think, and then we couldn't hear anything else. This guy whooping through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Do you have a tape of that?
No, but it sounded like this. Whoop, whoop, whoop.
It's just a reenactment, everybody. Don't panic. It's just Steve reenacting it.
I wonder how much he paid for tickets just to do that.
The guy didn't shut up.
Right.
It was like Ronnie Whoop Whoop.
Imagine sitting next to that guy. So you shell out $4,000 and you're sitting next to the whooping guy all through the show, all through the game.
He was more distracting than the sticker face guy.
It's his brother.
Wow, that really must have bothered you then. Because Steve does not like Sticker
Doesn't
Boy.
Doesn't like the Sticker Boy. No.
And Beyonce wiped out. She didn't hit the ground, but you could tell she slipped at some point and really recovered well. She's amazing. And
you know why she slipped? Because the Denver defense was all over the place. They almost tackled her for a loss.
And Bruno Mars is just the cutest little thing I have ever seen in my life.
Yes, he is.
But is he your go-to guy for Super Bowl entertainment? Isn't now this his third appearance?
He's got a lot of energy.
Who's better
than Bruno Mars right now? I don't know. He really brings energy, you know? So if you're looking for a show to be energized,
Uptown
I think
Funk is going to get you.
That's what I've heard. That's exactly what I've heard. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. Steve will give you the news, and then after Steve news, we'll check in with Dennis Ryan and find out which commercials last night were good, which were not so good. We invite you to weigh in 312-981-7200. It's us, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Puppy monkey baby. Puppy monkey baby. Puppy monkey baby. Puppy monkey baby. Puppy monkey baby.
Here's a
puppy
quiz, Wendy. Baby. Was this an ad from last night's Super Bowl or a nightmare that I've been having since I was 14 years old? Can you guess?
The nightmare.
It was a nightmare that I've been having since I was 14. Dennis Ryan joins us right now. Dennis is a principal at Fetro Ryan and Partners in Minneapolis, Minnesota, here to talk about last night's Super Bowl ads. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Hello, Bill. Hello, Wendy. I'm doing great. How
great
about
to
you?
Hear you. The game was a little lackluster. Everyone's in agreement. But you tell us, were the ads up to snuff or not?
Well, I think it's been a pretty big pretty common that, they weren't quite that interesting this year. I mean, you know, I still think it's a really good thing for people to do, but it's just getting harder and harder to surprise people anymore. And monkey puppy baby notwithstanding, which you should make that yourself, you know, your ringtone on your mobile. That would be good.
All right.
And you know what? That made a key error. I think they just should have put a baby's face on or a cuter puppy, and we'd be better off. But there was just nothing to like physically about the monkey puppy baby.
You know, I had missed the walking colon or whatever that was. And Steve Bertrand, you pointed that out to me, so I went online and watched it. That might be my favorite commercial.
Oh,
really?
Oh, no.
He is so cute.
It is cute in a, you know, in a, I don't know, intestinal way, but OIC, I mean, that's now a thing. A pill will give you constipation that you take a pill to get rid of.
So right.
It's a little bit spooky.
Dennis, it seemed like there were a lot of ads for people that either couldn't go to the bathroom or were going too much.
We're getting older, Bill.
Yeah.
It's Super Bowl 50. We're 50
I
and
guess,
up.
Yeah, I guess. All right. All right.
See, isn't it nice that we trade in erectile dysfunction for chronic constipation?
Sure that is.
Come on, that little walking colon, his gurgle, that was so cute and
well,
real.
He gurgles. Don't you like how it kind of picks up the pace? Like, oh, got to get going. You know, that was pretty fun.
Dennis, take us behind the scenes. When somebody pitches something, it was Mountain Dew that came up with Puppy Monkey Baby, and it was Exifosan. Is that how you say it? The one who had the colon. So when you think of an idea that is that off center, and you're pitching that to somebody, what's the mood in the room usually?
Well, that must have been, there must have been some laughing gas in there. But I think the good thing with both of those is they're critters. And they're, so you've got a visual you can use in social, and you've got something you can put in print and outdoor. And you can literally take this representative of, I mean, take the, I can't pronounce the, those names for pharma drugs.
Exifican, that one, is that it?
Yeah, Exifican.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I can't remember Exifican, but I can remember that little dashing colon. So, you know, that's the, or what did you use, Wendy? Burbly?
Gurgling.
Well, gurgling.
Gurgling.
The,
yeah.
The colon, so the little colon is cuter than the baby monkey. Whatever.
Yeah.
That thing's freaking me out. I must have missed that last night, too, but I just saw it, and he scares me.
Yeah, no, that, but I think that was it. Look how weird we are. Isn't this great? And so, but it does give you a thing, and having a critter or a thing just helps you across different platforms, and, you know, that's something they can play with for a long time.
Let's talk a little bit about the star power last night. Now, every year as the Super Bowl commercials come out, they get the people that are perceived to be some of the coolest in the industry, and that can be Willem Dafoe, and that can be Liam Neeson or whoever.
Helen Mirren.
Helen Mirren, certainly, yesterday for Budweiser.
God, she's hot. Isn't she stunning?
Yeah.
Well, you know what, and I totally agree with you, Wendy. I think she's fantastic, and I absolutely abhor that commercial.
Did you?
We're in one of the biggest parties of the year. And we've got someone being a scold telling us, you know, I don't know what the word pillock means, but, you know, it just felt so, you're trying to have your cake and eat it too. We're all, you know, hopefully you want us to be drinking Budweiser, but you tell us not to drink. I don't know. The whole
she
thing
drank
really,
it. She's all for drinking Budweiser. Just don't drink and drive. I thought it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a school marm thing and not something you do in the middle of a party. It's like, plus, why is she sitting alone in a dimly lit Italian restaurant?
Eating
the whole thing.
A hamburger and a huge portion of French fries. Even though that was subtle, I'm like, I don't know that Helen Mirren does this sort of thing.
She's doing a burger and a beer, and that's why she's 80, isn't she? Good for her. Well, God love her.
No, I love her. I think she's fantastic. But, yeah, not so much in that one. Actually, I think Budweiser just swung and missed last night, except for the Peyton Manning mentions. That was
yes.
Yeah, they didn't need Helen Mirren.
But, Dennis, go back to the other. Budweiser also had one that had Amy Schumer and Seth Rogen in it. I thought that was really pretty funny. Did you like that one?
Yeah, actually, I did. I thought the Budweiser ads were bad, but the Bud Light thing, it kind of worked, you know, and I think they were a little bit heavy-handed with the caucus jokes, but, you know, whatever.
There was. For people who didn't see it.
I didn't see that one either.
There were more jokes, more dirty jokes using the word caucus than we've ever seen in a national commercial before.
Exactly, which you'd expect that from Amy and Seth. But, you know, I think the hidden guest star of that one is Michael Pena's reaction throughout that spot. I laughed out loud. So that was pretty good, too. And, you know, it's topical with God knows all we're doing is talking about politics lately and debates and things. So, yeah, I thought that was really pretty fun.
What about in terms of just visual, like what took you visually? What commercials did you see last night that you just went, well, this is a beautiful 30-second or 60 seconds to watch?
Right. I think my favorite was far and away the Audi R8 one with the Starman track from Bowie.
Yeah.
You know, with the retired. I just thought the art direction, that was so beautiful. And, you know, maybe you shouldn't take someone out and with borderline dementia for driving the world's fastest production car. But, you know, it was still pretty cool. And, you know, I thought that was great.
Let me interrupt for 1 second because Kevin, the listener, called. And do you agree with Dennis on that Audi commercial, correct?
Oh, I am so glad to hear that. And Bill, one of you guys are always great. And Kevin's great. So
you're great. Dennis is great.
Yeah. Dennis, I'm so great. You guys are all great. I'm so grateful to hear that because that's the one that really, you know, struck me. It was great product ID. It was a great, yep, you know, person that, you know, everybody in America should, you know, acknowledge. And it was just such a well done product ID. The other thing
I
with you
totally
guys
agree,
about Helen Mirren, the product ID for that was just not really there.
Hashtag, what was it? Give it, or what was it? They had some weird hashtag for it.
I can't even tell you. But I think the other thing that says, you know, Budweiser has one agency, Bud Light has another agency. They don't really see the cross on that. But I completely agree with you. I called in as you guys were talking, even before you mentioned the Audi, and I completely agree with you.
Well, that's why I wanted to get you in to talk to Dennis. So thank you, Kevin. Back to you, Dennis. You're great.
Well, Kevin, if you get... You know what? Do you mind if I call in every day?
Because, yeah, that's fine.
Know, this is so reassuring, sure. You know, emotionally. You know, it's funny, that Audi ad, and Kevin did mention this notion, when you cut to the Apollo, the second stage falling away with kind of that round ring falling to Earth and tying that into the Audi logo mark, I mean, mm-hmm. It was just really well done from beginning to end. And, of course, the longer version available online, which is pretty smart. Actually, it was really funny. Car ads really, really did well last night, I thought. You know, as a category, they were far and away the best.
Dennis, hold that thought. More with Dennis Ryan in just a little bit. If you do want to jump in, 312-981-7200. All we ask is that you tell either Dennis or Wendy or myself that we're great. That's the only restriction we throw
on that.
You're
great, Bill.
Thanks, Wendy. You are great, too. The great Dennis Ryan in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. They even paid tribute, not just in song to him, but at the end of that ad, they even mentioned, you know, goodbye to the Starman, which was a nice little touch. Dennis Ryan joins us right now. We're talking Super Bowl commercials. Dennis is a principal at Fetro Ryan and Partners in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Dennis, a lot of people want to talk to you about last night's ads. We're at 312-981-7200.
All right, let's talk to Bob. Bob, Dennis, Dennis, Bob. How's it going?
Oh, it's going fine, but I wanted to comment on the Prius ads that they had yesterday. I thought they were absolutely terrible because they were glorifying the bank robbers. They should have had a more positive response. They should have shown maybe the police catching up to the bank robbers instead of letting the bank robbers get away and show how stupid the police were.
Dennis, what do you think?
You know, Bob, you've got a point, but this is the problem with the Prius thing. It actually was really smart with, oh, we're bank robbers, but we're responsible bank robbers because we're Prius owners. It was an odd thought, but actually what you suggested, they actually did. The problem, this is a lot like Amazon. It was too, it just went on too long. We had multiple parts, but their whole insight is people who own Prius are more responsible, even if they're bank robbers. So at the end, they did have policemen create a Prius and go chasing them with, you know, lights on top. It was actually reasonably funny. Overall, if you really paid attention, oh, okay, I get it. But the problem is it's the Super Bowl. No one's really paying attention. You got nachos and beer and people talking at a party. It was too complicated, and I think that really hurt it. But, yeah, I've seen that complaint. I've also seen people on Twitter were saying if they were four African-American guys in that Prius, it would have had a totally different outcome. So, you know, things very quickly turn social when people get concerned about, you know, how you're treating law enforcement or the military and things like that.
Thank you, Bob. Yeah. That's a great comment, though.
That to me. Okay, thanks.
Thanks
so much. We've got Susan who wants to talk to you, too. Susan, what did you like during the Super Bowl commercials?
Oh, my God. I love the Dorito commercial where the dad being just a goofball, aggravating the baby in the mother's womb with the Dorito teasing him. And the woman, typically, is probably laying there in pain, takes the Doritos, whips them on the floor, and the fetus shoots out. I thought it was hysterical.
Yeah, Doritos doesn't really go for the highbrow thing. They never have, but they do some good, broad, funny stuff. And, you know, it's very stereotypical. You got, hey, a doofusy guy with a smarter wife. But, you know, that's kind of how comedy seems to work in a lot of these things.
That's how real life works, too, I think, Dennis.
Well, there's that. Yeah, exactly. Well, you're probably right, Wendy. But
I'm kidding.
And again, it was, you're exactly right. That was a really popular ad in all the polls today.
Thanks, Susan.
Oh, my God, it was hysterical. Thanks a lot. And you guys are great.
Oh, thank you, Susan.
Is Dennis great, too?
Dennis is also great. We're all great.
You're so kind.
Oh, you're all great.
Thank you, Susan. The key to that one, Dennis, is not showing the baby shooting out of the womb, because that could be disconcerting, correct?
You know what? That would have made it monkey puppy baby.
That would have been monkey puppy.
They avoided it and so much more likable because of that.
Can I ask one?
Yeah, sure, Steve.
The toe fungus commercial with the... Right, and but it was with the it had the
NFL greats,
NFL announcing greats,
yeah,
and it had the NFL theme behind it,
yeah.
I mean, was the NFL tied in with that somehow? I mean, you had Phil Sims talking about toe fungus and then doing color on the game.
Yeah, that you're exactly right. They had to get licensing from the NFL. Each the deals with each one of those announcers are separate, so they don't have to do that to the NFL. But you're exactly right. If they're going to use the theme, they're paying for it. And so that was a very, very expensive ad. And again, kind of like running intestines, gurgling intestines, kind of hard to watch at times.
You guys, we all have bowel trouble, you know, now that we're getting older. And as you mentioned, the erectile dysfunction is not, you know, that's under control. And now they're worrying about the other stuff.
True. That's how it
fungus
happens.
Fungus.
That's what happens.
Man.
Dennis,
yeah.
There was an ad last night for Squarespace. Now, I will confess to you, I have no idea what Squarespace is. I liked the ad. It was Key and Peele, who are always funny. There was a line in there that I thought was hysterical, just a quick throwaway line. It looked like they had a 70s motif going, and one of them said, it was a 70s motif, but a spacey version of it. And one of them used the line, look where we are right now. It's a future hallway. And then they just kept going. That was very funny.
You know what? Key and Peele are just pants-wettingly funny. They're great. And Squarespace is interesting. Bill, you could make a website on Squarespace right now. You go there, they give you server space, and they give you some real simple tools so that anyone can make a website.
And
so
it looks pretty good. You can really create some good things without having to know how to code.
That's exactly it. Everything's kind of plug and play, and they're like Wix or some of these other kind of sites that are popping up, but getting Key and Peele just raised their awareness like crazy. And, you know, I forget whoever did the Kung Fu Panda is in a similar space, but I thought Key and Peele was a lot more breakthrough. And when he did say that we're in a futuristic hallway, I laughed at that too. It's like, well, that's apropos of nothing and funny.
You know, the funniest thing about the Kung Fu Panda thing was they parodied an Old Spice commercial just for half a second, but that was so subtle and perfect.
I think they parodied like three different commercials in that one.
Yeah.
It was that was you know, and that happened a lot. Taco Bell did a bunch of things where they were referencing internet memes and celebrities, basically specific to the web. And so it became a lot of these brands are really playing on insider knowledge, and maybe you get this, and if you don't, it's like kids watching Batman and back in the 60s and 70s. You know, you didn't get the references, but if you're an adult, it made you laugh.
The sheep singing Freddie Mercury and Queen, that is one of my favorite Queen songs of all time. I can't tell you what it was for. I can't remember.
Well, it was a Toyota truck with a sound system in the truck bed. So if you're outside the truck, you can still listen to music. And you're exactly right. A Dorset sheep singing like Freddie Mercury, that's pretty awesome.
Isn't it one of the staples of Super Bowl ads forever? Get animals to do things that normally humans do, and people will love it.
This is the thing, and I think this gets at kind of the, you know, Bob's earlier concern about the Prius spots. It's almost like the best Super Bowl ads for as far as just mass popularity, and we are talking about broadcast. You know, we've moved to such a narrow cast kind of market where people literally, I just want to talk to people who are interested in this very specific thing. Mm-hmm. Super Bowl is about everybody. It's not about a network. It's about a community. And so the broadest things work really well there. People want to laugh and they want it simple. It's almost like an old Gary Larson cartoon for the Far Side where it's just one panel and you get the whole joke. If you have to think too much about it, you start losing people. And again, they just want to see and react. And I think that's where something like, oh, wow, the sheep are singing. Hey, those dogs are dressed up as a person. I mean, on the face, that's kind of a dumb, dopey idea.
Yeah.
But you know what? It makes me laugh. It's just funny to look at. So there you go.
Dennis Ryan on the line with us, and we're talking Super Bowl commercials. Would you say that it hit the simple motif a lot more than previous years? Because I thought it all was pretty much way more simple.
You know, a lot of it was, but it's interesting. The ones that have caused a lot of talk. I mean, like, if you take Mountain Dew's Kickstart ad, you know, the one thing we're doing is we're talking about that weird thing. And so that, especially with that market, it makes a ton of sense. But, yes, I think the best ones, Kevin Hart is a very overprotective dad, and he wants to follow his daughter, and this thing in his car allows him to do that. Those are very simple premises, and they just do the same joke after it again and again.
That's your favorite person, really, isn't it, Kevin?
Yeah,
Hart?
I love Kevin Hart.
I have to interrupt because a bunch of people are texting us right now, Dennis. The Sheep commercial, I guess, wasn't effective because it was a Honda, not a Toyota.
Oh.
Well, there you go.
Oh, no.
There you go.
Oh, no. Who, Dennis?
Oh, wait. No, I did know that. It's a Honda Ridgeline.
Yeah, right, Honda Ridgeline. That's it.
See, I'm just so nervous. I'm not great, Wendy.
No, you got to work harder to be great.
I'm only so-so.
Dennis, we have 30 seconds with you. Tell us who wasted their money last night. Who spent a whole lot of money for a Super Bowl ad, and it just didn't work at all?
Boy, that's a good question. I'd say Colgate. You know, no one even watched that spot. Yeah, you waste money when you're brushing your teeth and the water goes down the drain. But that's not really if I did that, it's a logistics issue where clean water is and where clean water isn't. So I thought that was kind of a weird one. And the one thing I didn't understand, I love Anthony Hopkins, that TurboTax one where he wasn't selling out because the product was free.
Right.
If the product is free, why are they spending $5 million to put it on the Super Bowl?
I don't know.
I was a bit lost by that.
There are a few of those.
I love Anthony Hopkins.
Pokemon, you could say the same thing about. That you play that for free. Why are they spending that kind of money?
And $5 million. $5 million for this. Your Super Bowl won only $40,000 for a 30-second commercial.
Wow.
And I guarantee you it'll be more expensive next year.
How about that?
Good golly.
Dennis, thank you.
You're great.
Mark your date book. The once great. No, Dennis failed his greatness test.
I'll give him great.
He was once great.
I'm mediocre.
Oh,
that's the best.
Don't worry.
Dang.
Dennis, don't you worry. It's Dennis Ryan, you guys, principal at Fetro Ryan and Partners in Minneapolis. Dennis, have a great rest of the week. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
All right,
thanks,
take
Dennis.
Care. He's great.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye. A quick break. Steve with the news, and then more show, Bill and Wendy WGN. Thank you, Steve. It was a strange weekend for communication, and I will explain that. We had a couple of incidents where things were miscommunicated. Thing number one, I don't know if anybody saw the Bulls game on Friday night, but here's what happened in the latter portions of the Bulls game. Whoever was keeping score at the game in Denver was just not doing anywhere near the right job.
It was somebody's little brother. You know,
it was somebody's small brother.
That. Where you'd have a younger sibling flip over the numbers when you're playing intramurals. Somebody's younger brother was doing it.
As they pointed out on the broadcast, there were three different scoreboards in Denver. It was the Nuggets against the Bulls, and all three of the scoreboards had different scores on them, and nobody could determine which score was accurate. So as the game went on, especially in the fourth quarter...
Good God.
When... When the Bulls would score a basket, they would credit those points to the Denver Nuggets. And then a couple of times during a play, if you were watching the score, you know, because it's on a little board on the lower part of the TV screen, like for some reason they would just take 2 points off one of the teams. Like they would have 95 points
on the graphic,
and then all of a sudden
change.
They would lose 2 points, 93, and that kept happening. And they kept calling attention to it. The Bulls announcers kept saying, I don't know who's keeping score, but I think they should be looking for work tomorrow because none of the scoreboards match up. They give points to the wrong team. They take points away arbitrarily. And they kept stopping the game over and over because the referees kept going to the scorer's table and saying, we don't know what the score of the game is. The Bulls at one point were up by 18 late, and then they ended up losing. And the Bulls maintained, and I'm kind of with them. It was so jarring for them to start and stop and start and stop because they kept doing that all through the last part of the game. They said that cost the Bulls the game. They didn't know what was what anymore.
Well, that's terrible. A head mess up.
It was. And I've been watching basketball since before I was born. They used to hold my mom's stomach up to the TV and I would watch the game. I've never seen anything like that. They just couldn't figure out what the score was. Somebody was going back and looking at tapes of the earlier parts of the game and going, okay, well, that was a 3-point play. That was a 2-point. So I'm adding the 3. I'm subtracting. I'm moving that. But nobody knows to this day. I mean, it's been 4 days. Nobody knows what the real score was.
That's unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
I'm seriously.
I know. It's terrible. All right. Now, the other miscommunication that I think more people are probably aware of took place at the Republican debate where Ben Carson is still standing backstage, not sure if it's his turn to walk out yet and greet the people watching the debate.
I feel so sorry for him. And the only reason I know it is because I was watching SNL and Colin Jost said, and we go live now to the Republican debate.
Yeah.
And you hear Ben Carson and we hear it.
He didn't hear it.
And he didn't. It was loud back there.
Right.
That's why you have like people back there, like stagehands, to say, come on, let's go. You got to go out now. And then was it Ted Cruz that came? And Ben Carson's like,
go ahead. Trump stayed with him for a little bit. I guess he didn't hear his name.
No, and they looked like two idiots.
They didn't call Kasich's name at all. They, you know, at the end when everybody was out and there was an empty podium, somebody went, well, we should also introduce Kasich to everybody. So he came out.
Was it the
John
guy
Kasich.
Keeping score at the Bulls game
was the who same was guy.
Calling people out the same at guy. The Republican debate?
The problem with that was the where the stagehands were, the person whose job it's like a floor director or a stagehand to say, and you, now, go. He was far back, and I don't think Ben Carson realized when he sent him, because there was like a two-pronged section. Part number one was to go to that little runway backstage, and part two was to just walk out on stage and acknowledge the audience. So I don't think he understood once they sent him, he was sending him all the way.
No, he was probably just waiting to hear his name, which he didn't hear.
Right.
I felt so unbelievably sorry for him. I'm not going to vote for him, but I felt so bad. The only good thing is I guess you're in decent company when you're there with Trump looking like two dopes.
Yeah, it was a very strange start to the debate because it I don't know. I do, like you said, I feel sorry for him too, but I don't know why at some point he just didn't figure out, well, they're calling more names. I really should go out there.
But you're waiting for your name to be called. It would be worse to walk out prematurely and just like kind of go,
hello,
hey, how's it going? And
I'm everybody, here now.
Yeah. I mean, that stagehand who they showed just kind of opening a little bit of curtain on the far curtain, and you just see hands like pushing, like, go,
right.
go.
Well, you see the stagehand at some point backstage as he leans out and goes, yeah, now.
Yeah, but at that point, the guy should have come out and said, sir, your name has been called. Please, go. You know, at that point, you got it.
Right.
You're not going to take hand signals when you're walking out on this big televised debate.
Right.
Oh, I felt so sorry
for him. It was a strange beginning. And then the other strange moment was Chris Christie just pummeling. I don't understand. Is there a better word for it? For some reason, and Marco Rubio was in the middle of one of his, I guess Chris Christie would say, what was the word he used to describe talking points? Was that what he went with? It was just, it's the same speech that he's given before, and he went into it again, and Chris Christie called him out on it. And it was an angrier Chris Christie. I mean, he's got it in him to really turn and be a little bit upset. But, it was the boldest, brashest that we've seen him in any of the debates. And I guess you have to at this point. If you're trailing by that much, you have to go after somebody. It's just weird that was the route he chose, you know? You would have thought he would have gone after one of the two front runners.
You'd think.
You would have imagined, but maybe it's one of those things where you just chip away. I don't understand it.
All right, Brian wants to jump in. Brian, what do you
think?
Hey,
guys.
Hi there.
Yeah, you know, love you, love your show. Listen to you guys all the time. But I think when he was trying to walk out, there was that lady backstage that was trying to push him, and he wouldn't go. I think he wanted to wait backstage so he could make that joke about Ted Cruz saying that he might not have, he's going to, you know, not make it anymore because, you know what I mean? He wanted to
What's
wait.
What's the joke?
That joke that, well, the Ted Cruz said that he's no longer going to be part of the race anymore, or,
he,
you know.
He sent out the pamphlets in Iowa. Is that what you mean?
Right. Oh. That's what I meant to say, yeah.
So you think it was all preconceived, that this was planned?
Yeah, he was just waiting back there because he wanted to not show up so then he could make that joke because the lady back there kept trying to push him out, and he just kept saying, no. And he just stood there, and I don't know if he wanted to make that joke, but he knew what he was doing. He was standing there. Why nobody else knew, I have no idea, but I felt bad for him, too.
He looked pretty puzzled and confused. I don't know that this was intentional.
I don't know if he's a good enough actor to pull that off.
He's not.
I don't think so.
I did think it was a bad choice to make them walk down that hallway and then walk out to the stage. I thought that was pretty stupid.
That was strange, wasn't it? Because normally what happens in a show situation like that with live TV is whoever's pushing you out there is right there at the edge.
Right.
Not you know, what was he, 10, 15
not
feet back?
Not a corridor behind
right,
you.
Right, right. So that's where it probably got confusing. And this is still new to him. I mean, he's not used to doing this sort of thing.
His hands.
Yeah, no, it was definitely kooky, though. It didn't make sense.
So true. Thank you, Brian. Thanks, appreciate it.
Yeah.
I do notice
talk about
the
his hands.
And I noticed it, you know, obviously I've seen more of Jay Farrow doing Ben Carson than Ben Carson himself. So that drew my attention to it on SNL. But then it's like,
it's a very unnatural hand stance where he lifts them up like just below his neck.
Like he's a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah, it's
like
similar.
They're just up here like that. I don't know how to explain it.
There's no reason for it.
He doesn't. Well, he's a surgeon. He's used to doing something with his hands. So when he's not operating, he doesn't know what to do with his hands.
He should knit or something. He should bring some knitting to work on while he's up there.
Oh my God, that'd be so funny.
But yeah, he keeps them incredibly high up on his body.
It's not comfortable.
It doesn't look natural. I don't know why somebody doesn't work with them on that and go, hey, hands are for down here, not for up here. You don't need to.
Well, your hands can go anywhere.
Well, they could, but they, like, anytime they ask him a question, he automatically just lifts his hands like Simon Bar-Sinister in an episode of Underdog. Keep your hands down, Ben. We know you have hands. We're not going to vote for you or not vote for you based on your hands.
Simon Bar-Sinister says.
Right. It was like that. All right, let's
go out on stage too.
Now, let's take a quick break and then we have more show. If you want to jump in, easy to do. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We were talking about Ben Carson, Dr. Carson, who was hanging out behind the stage because he didn't hear his name being announced.
Right.
At the Republican debate on Saturday night. And it's weird because Trump is really kind of on top of all this. I'm shocked that Trump was caught back there with them. It made Carson look better, in my opinion, and Trump look worse.
I'm just shocked. You know, Trump usually gets what he wants. I'm surprised he just didn't go up to him and go, get out there. I want you out there. You out there now.
And Carson would have
listened.
He showed
some restraint.
Robert, what did you think about this? You saw this?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I just couldn't help myself to laugh. It seemed like he was taking a nap, you know, like he was still asleep. Because the people in the back, if you notice, the lady was like, go, go. And he would turn around and he would say, like, it seemed like he was saying, I'm fine. And then he'll turn back around and seemed like he closed his eyes.
It did kind of look like that.
It was hilarious to me. It almost seems like a Saturday Night Live, you know, acting thing they did, and it was just hilarious. But the thing with Ben Carson, every time I watch Ben Carson and having him, you know, in all these conversations he's had, it's like when I'm a bad reader. I start getting sleepy, my eyes burn, and I cannot get through a page. Watching Ben Carson talk puts me through that same scenario. My eyes burn, I get really sleepy, I just can't. As hard as I try to listen to him, it's hard. He just puts me to sleep.
His demeanor is extremely low impact.
Low-key.
Very.
Yeah.
And I think it's because he is a surgeon, a brain surgeon, so he has that very calm, assertive feel to him where everything has to be so calm and so subtle that he cannot get excited if his life depended on it.
Yeah.
And in a way, I kind of like that. Don't you want someone who keeps calm as the rest of the world is freaking out?
I mean, to some extent, I guess, but at the same time, he can give you the feel of saying, gosh, I mean, give me a little bit more passion here. I mean, something's really going wrong here. And if you're that calm, I don't know, it can go, it's almost like a double-edged sword, you know, and damn if you do, damn if you don't type thing. And yeah, but to me, like I said, every time I watch him, it's like reading a book, my eyes burn and I get really sleepy.
And what else do you want from a president, really, than to make your eyes burn and get sleepy?
All right, so tell me how you feel about Trump, then. What does Trump make you do?
Trump, it's he's an acting himself. He's I think Trump thinks he's doing his show and his whole with his whole business. It seems like an all an act. He doesn't make me feel like he's realistic about what he does and what he's talking about. Half the time he can't answer the questions. Everything is good. I know people. Everything's going to be huge. Everything is big. And everything is all short in those type of little things he gives you. He don't give you nothing worth saying, okay, that's really good. Yeah, I hear you. Everything with him, it seems like it's all an act, like a show. Like he's really, like he feels he's in a show still.
Show business. That's what it seems
that's
like.
It
all
is.
The time.
That's all it is. Show business. I don't think it's even about the money. He just wants to stay relevant in the world, period. I guess once he knows he gets kicked out, maybe he's hoping to get kicked out because of the stuff that he says is so off the wall. And he's like, gosh, they still won't kick me out. But he's so in it now, you know, so far into it that I guess once he's done and over, then he's going to go on TV and say, you know, I ran for president, I did this, I said that, and he continues to be relevant in the world.
No, he'll tell us when he goes on TV that he won the presidency, even if he doesn't, because right. he remembers things a certain way.
He could do that, too. Yeah. I mean, everything for shock value, right?
A random listener, Robert, and his take on the candidates. Thank you so
much, Robert.
We appreciate it.
Nice day, guys.
Look at the personality difference between just those two men. Ben Carson, who is so, I mean, really, he does seem like he could nap at any time. And then Trump is the exact opposite, ready to pounce at any second. So that's your spectrum right there.
That's
yin and yang.
That's it. And we might have time for one more real quickly here. This is Frank. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Wendy, Bill, thanks for taking the call. On your topic of miscommunications over the weekend, during the debate, I think one of the biggest ones was when the moderator asked the panel there what they thought about having 18-year-old girls sign up with the selective service system.
Yeah.
And I think in their haste to pander to 18-year-old girls, they said, yeah, sign them all up. They all have the right to serve in the military. Well, the signing up for the selective service system isn't going after your right to serve. That's saying that, you know, if war comes, you agree to be called.
It's worded and strangely.
Is the draft back?
The draft isn't back, Wendy. But these people on the panel are so far removed from the time when the draft was in.
Yeah.
That they don't understand that if you get that letter in the mail, your hiney belongs to the government for 2 to 5 years. And it's very, very disappointing that all seven of them so quickly jumped on the, oh, yeah, let's please the young girl bandwagon, that they totally missed what was being asked of them. I was totally disgusted with their answers. And how easily they would send our granddaughters and our daughters off to war.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
It is.
And I thought that, you know, it's the law, isn't it? You hear all the PSAs, it's quick, it's easy, it's the law. When you're 18, you have to register with the Secret Service.
Not the Secret Service, the Selective
Service. I'm sorry, yes, Secret Service.
That's did you okay. register with the Secret yeah. Service,
I did,
Wendy?
I did the wrong
oh,
thing.
Oh, that's not right.
A long time ago when I was 18.
Well, Bill, having been of the age where you had to register, I can tell you that during wartime, it ruins your life.
Yeah.
It absolutely ruins your life when you get that letter in the mail that says, Frank, you are now 1A. Ugh. That doesn't mean you're superior. That means that your butt could be called at any minute to go fight war. And I don't think we should be sending our young girls or our young men.
Yeah.
But if it has to be done, let's leave it to the guys. The girls could do something else here to help, but I'm not going to send young girls off to war.
Maybe they want to go, though. You got to look at it that way,
well,
Frank.
That's always an option if they want to sign
and
up.
Wendy, and that's where the recruitment offices will welcome them in, and if the girl wants to do it, fine. I'm not against women fighting. Hey, there's plenty of women I'd love to send to war. But...
I don't know how to take that one.
They kick some butt over there. But the average 18-year-old girl has no idea what it's like to have to go into combat and how it's going to ruin their lives. And let's hope that we don't go down that rabbit hole to satisfy some old white guy's angst for getting into war.
All right. Well, thank you for your
opinion.
Frank,
thank you.
And, I mean, you still have to register, don't you,
once you're 18? As far as I know, the draft has been gone for years, but there's still a registration project.
Why do you register, then?
I guess it's just one of those things where they know what's what and who's who and what's where. It just, they've been doing that for years.
I know. You remember all those PSA commercials?
Yeah.
Register with the Selective Service.
It's quick, it's easy.
And it's the law.
Yeah.
When you're 18 years old.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't want my kids to register.
I don't think you have a choice. Although there was an option that I think is still intact where you can be a conscientious objector and mark that on your card.
That doesn't work anymore, does it?
I don't know if it ever did it ever really work?
No, you just had to put on a puppet show and act kind of goofy.
Yeah.
Maybe you'd get sent home.
I know. All right. We have to throw it to Kim's News in just a second. Stay where you are. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I'm almost expecting Eric Zorn to come in a monocle one of these
wouldn't
times.
That be something to see Eric Zorn in a monocle? And when I say Eric Zorn, of course, you know, I mean the Avuncular Tribune columnist, Eric Zorn. Hello, Avuncular Trump. I can't even say it.
Avuncular Trump.
I almost called him a trombone. I thought he was a trombone.
Hello, everybody.
Avuncular, of course, meaning...
Like an uncle, similar to an uncle. Someone you would regard the same way you...
With the same respect
and affection that you would regard.
Drunk uncle?
A drunk uncle, yes. The guy you sit next to at Thanksgiving. Spews comments that you find that make you really uncomfortable.
Is there an ant version of avuncular? Is there some word that would imply that... Is it untuncular?
I don't know. That's a good question.
There should be an ant version
Speaking of sexism...
Yes.
There's been a lot of criticism of this ad, the Hyundai Genesis ad. Yes. That ran, it was, I think it was right before. Hyundai?
You said avuncular, but you couldn't say Hyundai.
Hyundai.
That's weird.
That is weird.
It's matertural.
Can we start again?
We're not on the air yet.
Guys, no, we'll start now.
Ant version is matertural. What is it, Kevin?
Matertural.
Matertural is the all right. I didn't know that.
We'll try that for next week.
Right. It won't fit for you.
It won't fit. Well, you call when you have Kristen McQuarrie in here to talk politics.
She could be matertural.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right.
She'll slap you.
She probably wouldn't be the first time.
Speaking about this ad for this Korean
Hyundai.
Car maker,
yes,
Hyundai. Right before kickoff yesterday, it's the one with Kevin Hart in it, the comedian, and it begins with the doorbell ringing, and Kevin and this beautiful woman answers the door. And clearly it's a date situation, right?
Right.
And then Kevin Hart pops his face out like from behind
the commercial lost me.
Well, I thought, was your first thought like this is one of these terrible misunderstandings where he thinks she's single, but actually it just seemed like at some point that wasn't where that was going because Kevin Hart doesn't look old enough to be that woman.
To have a daughter that age.
Daughter.
Right.
And
right.
In fact, Kevin Hart's 36.
Yeah.
And the actress is Paige Hurd. She's 23. So Kevin Hart is not old enough to be, be Paige Hurd's father. So,
right.
So it's a little weird anyway. But as you remember, everyone watched the game, probably saw this ad.
Yeah.
It is for this feature that the car has. I'm not sure what the name of the feature is exactly, Car Finder or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's essentially a GPS feature where you can always tell where your car is.
Mm-hmm.
And I can think of some reasons why you might at some point want that feature. Like maybe you've gone to the mall before Christmas and you can't remember where you've parked your car.
That would come in handy.
But stalking your daughter on a date.
Well,
that's not stalking.
Oh, my goodness.
That's keeping track.
I kept thinking, first of all, for the record, I don't understand the appeal of Kevin Hart at all in any way, shape, or form. I'm baffled that America has fallen in love with Kevin Hart because, to me, I've described him as a gnat. He just won't go away. You know, for the life of me, I can't figure out why anyone thinks he's funny.
I find him funny on occasion. He
a
was
lot
on
of
SNL,
do.
And he was actually pretty funny in spots.
I can't. Every time he's on, as soon as I see him, I go, I'm out. Whatever it is, I can't watch it anymore.
You're jealous.
It's not even jealousy. I mean, everybody has somebody like this where you go, that guy, it's like the Emperor's New Clothes.
Everybody thinks he's funny,
involved in this guy.
But I know the truth.
I can't figure out what it is about him. Anyway, one of the features of the car that they were trying to say is if you want to keep an eye on your kid, I mean, he was literally keeping an eye on his kid.
Following him around on a day to a county fair.
Right.
What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that? Well, first of all, the reason that I brought it up in the context of sexism is this is being ripped online as, you know, you would never have a commercial like that with a father or a mother following a son around
right.
on a date like that.
Probably not.
And I would.
Would you?
I have sons. I want to know where they are.
You would follow them around with a GPS?
Maybe. Not
maybe.
Unbeknownst to them. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Okay, so, but anyway, this got me to thinking about this kind of feature on a car and the fact that all of us are carrying around already these devices that track us.
Mm-hmm.
And is this something that you would want, or that you would care that your family members would be able to know exactly where you are at all times? Is that a feature that you find important? Like, for instance, would you want to know?
I got to tell you, I got nothing to hide. If you want to find out where I am, it really doesn't bother me. And I don't think it would bother my kids.
Especially your husband, right? I mean, Jimmy Mack wouldn't care. I mean, you wouldn't care if he knew where you were at all times and vice versa. And I'm sure with Terry also, you guys wouldn't.
They'd know where I am at all times anyway.
You're either here
or at the health club or tennis court.
I
don't have any other options. Right. So I'm easy to find.
So the question is this, given that, and I have the same feeling, it's like completely matter of fact where my car happens to be at any time. But is this something that, is this where we're going with phones and cars?
I would like it.
We're always going to know exactly where everybody is.
What if they disappear? What if your child disappears, guy or girl? You're going to want this on your car then.
Well, or if your car disappears. And I can see that. If your car is stolen, it would be a great thing to be able to.
But even not stolen, what if, like, you don't hear from your son or daughter and you're wondering where they are?
How many times when you were a teenager?
Times have changed. And my mom didn't want to know where I was.
I didn't even have to finish the question. How many times go to point B when you told your parents you were going to point
A? I lied to my mom all the time because she was not cool. There you have it. It was a different time.
And you're cool, so this is fun.
No, but I mean, I have a much more open relationship with my kids. They do things I don't like. I say things they don't like, but we communicate way more than my mom and I did.
Yeah,
she never knew where I was.
Bill?
What would be? Oh, if this option were available, would I have a chip put in my kid's shoulder so I knew where they were?
Essentially, because that's what I mean. Essentially, when you can find their phone, you can find them.
True.
Right.
They have that turned on, the Find My iPhone.
Right, but I'm guessing that you could probably find it anyway if you had to call the authorities or something, right?
But
I don't know.
Yeah, but then at what age would you say, okay, now that you've hit the age of 16 or 18 or 19, where would it be 50? You turn the chip off at 50?
I think when they're 21.
At what point are you hovering too much? What point are you wanting to know too much? Is it too much of a leash? I mean, in a sense, it is a leash. Isn't it?
Yeah, but it's like we have the technology now. We didn't before. I think our parents might have done it with us if they could have, but it wasn't even thought about. And 21, they're a full-blown adult.
Right.
You got to let go at some point. I will keep it on until 30, but, you know, most people, 21.
Turn off the GPS. Well, what about a spouse? Would you want to know where your spouse is at all times?
No. Oh, boy, that's tough. Terry and I, again, I know that we're probably alike for many people, but different for others. There's very little to hide in terms of where we are or at any point. So
right, and I was saying this to Johanna yesterday. I said, you know, why not? You know, it'd be nice to know when you're on the way home from work. You know, because I'm often home before she is, and I could just like instead of like calling her cell phone, I could just like look on the thing. It's like, oh, look, she's on the Kennedy or whatever.
But, yeah.
But
then she goes past your house and goes somewhere else.
She's at Ryan Reynolds' house. What's she doing at Ryan Reynolds' house?
What's she doing there?
All right, Eric Zorn is here. We know he's here because we put a chip in his shoulder. It's easy to find Eric Zorn. Stick around. More coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Eric Zorn is here. We're talking about one of the ads in particular, the first date ad from Hyundai, the Hyundai Genesis. And Kevin Hart stars in the ad. Eric has brought up.
Yes, you are. Sorry.
I'm very sorry. He stars in the ad. I was going to buy a Hyundai, and then I said, I'm out. Can't buy one. Eric Zorn has brought up the question about stalking or cyber stalking your kids or your husband or your wife. It's funny that you brought this up because prior to the game, CBS had a special like an hour and a half, 2 hours before the Super Bowl with things you didn't know about the Super Bowl. And one of them is all the players that play for both teams have a chip in their shoulder pads. And the reason they keep a chip in there is so when, did you ever see after a play, they'll diagram it and they'll show the way the routes that all the players took?
Yeah.
Those chips provide that for their computer that they just hit a button and all of a sudden that magically, you know, shows up on your screen. And I said to one of my daughters I was watching with, I go, okay, now it's football players, but in a couple of years, it'll be every one of
us.
It'll be teenagers,
right. I thought that, but that's interesting. I didn't know, and they just do that for the Super Bowl, or is it for every game?
No, I think they do it for other games, too.
I know in basketball now they have this program that follows the players around the court, and at the end of the day, they can tell you how many miles they've run and just how active they've been and
like
so on.
Like a Fitbit kind of thing?
Yeah,
kind of a Fitbit.
A couple of years ago, my brother told me, so understand that I took this with a grain of salt. He wouldn't get a Jewel Preferred card because he said when you go into Jewel, if you have a Jewel Preferred card, they can chart you all around the store and know where you're going and
how long
you're spending there. But I said they don't do that in a Jewel Preferred card. It's so you can save money on grapes.
Actually, that's not why they have the card. They had the card because they wanted to keep track of what you buy. So they could feed you coupons at checkout that would
that you've already bought. That's so annoying.
Well, but yes, but they would be able to predict maybe if, well, she brought the rice checks this week, maybe she'll buy the corn checks next week.
No, you get the coupon for what you just bought and you just want to yell at them. Thanks.
Well, they give you a coupon for an opposing company. More times than
not. Oh, no, I get it for what I've just purchased.
And I think it also had to do with the kind of things they would mail you and so on. And, and there were ways that they would just keep track. I mean, I don't think it was like metadata. They would be able to keep track of
who cares what aisle you're in.
But then I talked about it on the air and I go, my brother, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And all these people called up, including a guy who helped develop the system. He goes, oh, no, they want to know, the people at Jewel or any grocery store want to know your exact route of how long you're spending in this aisle and this aisle and this aisle, if you're going to produce first or if you're going to beer first.
I don't believe it.
Just do that with a video camera. They could watch people go through the store. Maybe this makes it easier.
But they wouldn't know. Like,
it would be weird. You pick up a box of cereal and some guy's got a video camera behind the
just following
rice
you.
Checks.
Right. with a steady cam.
And Kevin Hart.
But there were a number of people I know who didn't use those cards because they didn't want the man to know what they were buying. And I'm right. thinking, like, what are you buying?
What's so secretive?
There was a story that a family, like a father knew that his daughter was pregnant before anybody else did, before she told him, because the stuff she was buying at Target or something.
How about that?
So there are some downside, but I feel like people think that the companies are much more interested in them than they are. They're looking for buying patterns. They say, yeah. If he buys the Smucker's jam, is he buying the Thomas's English muffins, or is he buying the house brand, and so on? And they can do that, I guess, more easily when they know who you are. But they've dropped that. I think Jewel has dropped their preferred customer.
The preferred cards are gone. But they also can tell, like, when you walk in, where you're going, where, you know, your exact route, and then that's prime space for them. Like, if they know more people are in this part of the store, they spend more time there, that's prime real estate for them.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a whole science to where they put things in grocery stores.
Oh, yeah.
You guys
they
are
put at the end of the aisle. What's down low on the shelves? What's up high on the shelves? They
put kids' stuff lower because that's where kids' eyes are.
And Kevin Hart.
And Kevin Hart is also low.
He sits in the little baby seat in the cart. I've taken him around the Jewel.
He buys more Apple Jacks than anybody else in America. Did you know that? Because it's low. So, it's not fair to do this to you because we only have a minute and a half, but this weekend was a big one in terms of politics.
Oh, yeah. Let's change subject really quickly. Yes. No, it was fascinating this weekend. Either of you see the debate? The ABC
on and
debate?
Off for me. Wendy, did you watch much of it? Well,
I did not watch it.
They just hammered on Marco Rubio.
Yeah, they did.
Especially Chris Christie was going after Rubio because Rubio has had this talking point that he wanted to say, you know, Barack Obama knows what he's doing. He's deliberately ruining the country. And he said it like four times in the same way. And it seemed very robotic.
Yeah.
And Christie hammered him on it. And a lot of the commentators after the debate and the next morning on the talk shows were saying that Rubio had had a terrible night and that this was a really bad thing for him. Rubio doubled down on it yesterday, was saying, I'm going to keep saying that. I'm glad they're playing that clip of me saying it over and over again because I really mean that. But it was one of those things like, is it one of those, like the Howard Dean scream moments where it defines a candidacy and it defines this moment? Or is it something that's just going to be forgotten about if Rubio does well on Tuesday? And nobody knows. It's one of the really fascinating things about New Hampshire is it comes so quickly after Iowa. Iowa, of course, was a week ago today. So 8 days later it comes in. And so they do polling, but things, you know, the facts on the ground change all the time there so quickly.
Right.
And so you're going to have people making up their minds today, tomorrow, as they head to the voting booth. And so the polling there is notoriously unreliable. People do, but that, if you remember, was it 8 years ago, Hillary Clinton was supposed to be just getting clobbered by Barack Obama, and she came back and won that.
Yeah.
So people are saying that it looks like Trump's going to win big and Bernie Sanders is going to win big. The polls are saying that. But, you know, just about anything could happen.
Sure.
Kasich looks like he's doing well in New Hampshire. They think Rubio might be doing well. Trump seems to still be polling well. Bernie Sanders is way out in front of Hillary Clinton, but all those things can change, and that's going to really change the dynamics going forward.
Can you be way out in front of anybody in New Hampshire? There's only 600 people in all of New Hampshire.
You would think, yeah, that a couple people change their minds and it completely inverts the election. But no, it's tomorrow is going to be really interesting. And
let's see what happens.
Up late.
Thank you, Eric, the avuncular Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Thanks again. We will be back in just a little bit and find out what Steve has. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's part two of our show, the Monday edition of Bill and Wendy. Join in, 312-981-7200. You can call that number, you can text that number, and you will be part of the proceedings.
You know what today is?
Oh,
we did not celebrate it during our first show.
Sure I do. What is today?
Super Monday.
Today is Super Monday.
No, it isn't. It's National Pizza Day.
Oh, it is.
Why didn't they tie it in with Super Bowl Sunday?
Because, you know, the football gets all the attention. Maybe they just wanted their own day. There's nothing wrong with that. Although I think Super Bowl Monday is probably the most pizza-full day of the year, isn't it? Don't you think most people probably eat pizza?
Did you have pizza yesterday?
No.
Neither did we.
It's leftover pizza day.
It is. Today would be
leftover. I have
some
in my refrigerator from last night.
That was your Super Bowl party?
Oh, my Super Bowl party was extremely lame.
Was it?
Yeah, I guess if you're
what
doing
happened,
leftover
Kim, why?
Pizza.
Oh, long story short, we were supposed to go to a party that didn't happen, and then so we were just stuck and ordered pizza. So it was still fine. It was fine.
Well, today is National Pizza Day, and Max and Leo's, located inside King's Bowl Lincoln Park at New City on Clybourne and Halstead, celebrating National Pizza Day with free coal-fired pizzas for the first 20 guests to visit the restaurant that day. I think 20 people have gone already.
I would imagine.
But we have got something. They're also going to offer half-price pizzas for guests who mention National Pizza Day throughout the day, February 8th. Just mention National Pizza Day when you go into Max and Leo's. Or why don't you just call us right now, 312-981-7200, and the 7th and 8th caller will each get a $25 gift card for Max and Leo's, which is located inside King's Bowl Lincoln Park. You can also go bowling while you're there.
Wouldn't that be nice?
They have artisan pizzas.
Mm-hmm. Meaning, what does that mean exactly? Do you know?
Funky stuff.
Oh, all right.
For instance, they have like a prosciutto and onion and goat cheese.
That's an artisan pizza right there.
And they had something called the Marley pizza.
This is pizza with dreadlocks on it, which a lot of people go, hey, there's this, I'm not sure I like this, but it, after you get used to it, you like it. It's good.
It's tomato sauce, arugula, a mozzarella cheese, and shaved parmesan with a balsamic vinaigrette drizzle. It was really good.
Oh, yeah? Oh, that sounds good.
Really good. And if I could just say the lumina, the caramelized onions, sliced pears, that's what I forgot, ricotta cheese, and prosciutto. And it's drizzled with an organic wildflower honey.
Just drizzled, though, not drenched in, just
show
a
me the
mild
honey.
Drizzle.
So Max and Leo's, we have, what did I say, 7th and 8th
callers? Callers 7 and caller 8 are going to win this.
Lori from Wilmette is one of the winners,
and
a person who has not been named yet.
$25
gift card.
A person who wants to remain anonymous.
Rich.
Rich thought it was like the lottery. He didn't want it to ruin his life, so he said, I want to win, but don't mention my name. Rich, we will not mention your name.
He's from East Chicago, too,
right.
So don't mention that.
I won't.
Okay, two $25 gift cards. They each get one, and enjoy your National Pizza Day, and I hope it's better than Kim. Because she's
right.
Having leftover pizza for National Pizza
not
Day.
Not as
today.
Good. Still good, but not as good. You know, it's going to be Valentine's Day on Sunday. And so people ask, what is the most romantic city in America, Wendy? What would your guess be?
You are, Bill.
Well, that's very kind of you. Oh, actually, that's the winner. It says here in the survey, wherever I am is the most romantic city. Is there a city that you, when you think
Paris.
Of romance, see now... If this were nationally, it would have to be Paris, but they're saying within the confines of the 50 states.
Oswego.
Number 6.
It's not.
It's not on the list. Oswego did not make the list. But most of these, I don't know if I consider these romantic cities. Actually, some of them, yes, but some of them, for instance, St. Louis came in number 9, and St. Louis is a fine place to visit, but I don't know that I think of romance when I think of St. Louis. Do you?
Is this the top 10?
Yeah, they listed the top 10.
Is that number 10?
Number 9. Number 10 was Colorado Springs, Colorado, which, again, I've been there for skiing purposes, but I don't think of romance when I think of Colorado Springs.
But I would think, I have never skied in my life, and I never will, but you couldn't cuddle up by the fire in the lodge. That would be romantic.
In all honesty, any place I've ever skied, you know, locally, yeah, I mean, you could say Wilmot Mountain is romantic, I guess. You could stretch things a little bit.
Is there a lodge there?
Yeah. But the places that I've gone to in Colorado, like Breckenridge and Telluride and stuff, they are very romantic for the reasons you just said.
Okay, so wouldn't very you put pretty. Colorado above St. Louis? Is
I
the
would.
Arch that romantic? It's only yes. half a heart.
Right, that's true. Maybe that's what they were thinking of. Maybe that's why it's number 9. They listed Colorado Springs 10. They listed St. Louis 9. Number 8 was Omaha, Nebraska. I've been there several times. I don't think of it as a romantic city at all.
All I think of is Mutual of Omaha.
Right. Right. It's a big insurance town. They want to sell you insurance. So is that romantic? You
never been to Omaha.
You decide.
Have you been to Omaha?
Oh, a bunch. Yeah.
When
many
you did stand up?
Yeah, a lot.
So if you went to a lot of these places because of doing stand up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because mm-hmm. I've not been to many of our neighboring states or even any.
Omaha is fine, but it's not the place. If you said, we just want a romantic weekend away from the kids, how about Omaha? That probably has never been said, I don't think. Number 7 was Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Again, not romantic in my opinion.
What is romantic there?
I don't know what they were. I don't know what their criteria was. But, you know, I guess everyone's definition of what is and isn't romantic. But I think of waterfalls a lot. I like that kind of a, you know, a beach, some body of water nearby. I like a
maybe
lot of
Niagara
lights.
Niagara Falls.
I would put that way up. I would put that over Omaha or St. Louis. Birmingham, Alabama. I have to say Birmingham is Alabama, somewhere in the middle.
Wait, go back to Oklahoma
sure.
City, because I have 7 romantic things that you could do in Oklahoma City, which I didn't know existed. For instance, would you like a for instance?
Give me one.
A Bricktown water taxi. Although it's cold there now, isn't it?
It's not as cold as it is here, but it is still a little bit cold. Yeah.
All right. Well, there's a Bricktown water taxi. There's a boathouse district. Pole position raceway.
Mm-hmm.
How's that romantic?
I don't think it is. I don't think it is at all.
Will Rogers Park?
And
the 1903 Henry Overholser Mansion.
Oh, is the Overholser Mansion there? All right, then I've changed my mind.
Michael Murphy's Dueling Pianos Bar? That's romantic.
Is it?
No.
I don't know if it is.
I didn't know they had that many romantic places in Oklahoma City.
Number 5 on their list, this is again according to Huffington Post, which so far has been wrong on all counts, Santa Fe, New Mexico. I've never been to Santa Fe, New Mexico, so I can't comment.
I think of Breaking Bad. Is that romantic? To do some meth in a
not
trailer?
Not for me. No?
Yeah, I'm
not for
thinking
me.
That either.
Atlantic City, New Jersey is kind of a...
Never been there.
A shadier version of Las Vegas.
Oh.
If that's possible. Like Las Vegas has more... Pizzazz
showgirls.
And showgirls. Atlantic City has the same kind of atmosphere, but I don't, again, that's not romantic to me. I like all the things that I would consider to be romantic. Like I said, I like a nice beach. That's always a plus.
Fireplace.
Yeah.
Nice candlelit dinners.
Always a good thing. Yeah. Yeah. That kind of thing. Number 3, now this may shock a lot of people, and I am one of them, because I love this city. This is one of my favorite cities. If I was going to relocate
Maine.
From Chicago, no, because that's what I think of when I think of romance, is a lighthouse on a beach. You know, that to me, that's beautiful. Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the 3rd most romantic city in America, according to
Huffington Post needs to lose their license.
Now, I will say this. You know, I like Cops, Frozen Custard a lot, and I have fallen in love many, many times because of Cops, Frozen Custard. I'll bring my wife up there, and we just fall in love all over again as soon as we have that. But it's not, Milwaukee doesn't say romance to me.
No, it says cheese curds and sausage.
Yep.
Which could be romantic.
Right. Maybe a bowling game or two, a couple of frames of bowling. Number 2, Newport, Rhode Island. That's a romantic place.
I've never been, but that sounds like the only one that
seems
romantic.
That's a very
romantic
place. That has the lighthouses that I like. It has the beach that I like. A lot of great restaurants. And number 1, also very romantic, I have to admit, Virginia Beach, Virginia. Is very, very pretty. Very romantic. But on the other 8...
No Chicago?
Did not make the top 10 list.
I think we should be there over Milwaukee or Oklahoma City.
Easily. And New York is an incredibly romantic place, too. Yes, there's rats.
But aren't there?
Rats aside, New York City is an incredibly romantic place.
Somebody says, why is San Francisco not on
that
list?
That's also a very romantic place.
That's totally romantic.
It really is.
All the hills, the cool
yeah.
old Victorian houses, the cable cars, the Rice-A-Roni.
Rice-A-Roni is the San Francisco treat, Wendy. Nothing says romance like Rice-A-Roni. Nice dish of Rice-A-Roni. So I'm canceling my subscription to Huffington Post. I'm no longer paying for it.
All right.
No more.
Have you paid for it before?
Never have before, but never will in the future either. A quick break. We have other things to discuss with you. Stay where you are. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Do you wish that you were handier around the house? Learn how to tackle those DIY projects with some help from the local home experts. You can do it with Weekend Workbench Sunday mornings at 11 on WGN-TV.
Coming up after the 1:30 news, we're going to talk to Andrea Darlis, who is live in New Hampshire at the home of the debate. So we will check in with her. Can I go back to the Super Bowl for a little bit? Very briefly, we talked about it for the first part of our show, and the commercials weren't as great as anticipated.
Right.
Halftime show, I guess I could say better than I expected, but still, to me, not like...
Still didn't do it for you?
You wanted an extravaganza. Mm-hmm. Like when they were showing the earlier shows over the 50 years of the Super Bowl, Michael Jackson, I forgot how fantastic that show was.
They showed clips of his show. They showed U2. They showed Bruce Springsteen. All of those were really blockbuster events.
This paled in comparison.
It was fine. It was. I mean, it's the game was just okay. The ads were just okay. The halftime show was just okay.
Well, they've been doing this now for maybe what, 15, 20 years? The big one?
Right around 20,
well,
Steve.
Yeah, they definitely, yeah, because U2 did it at 2001 or 2002.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's just time to chuck it.
No, never chuck it.
Do something different.
Can I just say, and we can go back to talking about the halftime show and who they should have, and maybe we should go over some of the ones that have been.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, Lady Gaga was fan-flipping fantastic.
She's got a great voice.
Did you really see it?
Yeah.
She was great.
She did a beautiful job with the song.
Oh.
Did you notice her shoes, by the way?
Yes.
All right.
First of all, platforms as tall as Kevin Hart.
Taller. I think taller.
And go ahead and explain the two different shoes.
She was obviously singing an extremely patriotic song, so why not wear a pair of really patriotic shoes? One shoe was the stripes of the American flag, the red and white stripes. The other was the blue background with the white stars. You can't get those at Kinney's. You got
a
special order those
shoes. Dating
a
Kinney?
Maybe she is.
What's his name?
Yeah, I think she is, actually.
He's from Chicago.
Yeah, I don't know his name, but I think she is.
That was
maybe
very good.
Maybe he got her a deal on the shoes.
She was fantastic. She looked gorgeous.
It was a grown-up version of Lady Gaga.
Except the eyeshadow. That was just, it matched
a lot of red,
her
sparkly eyeshadow.
Suit.
Again, patriotic.
Yeah. It was
blue patriotic.
Nails.
Yeah.
That could have killed you. Because they were, it was
like
Edward, yes, or Edward Scissorhands.
Or Edward Scissorhands, yeah.
But she was amazing. And anyone who says Lady Gaga can't sing and she's weird and she's this and she's that, she's nothing but spectacular.
Yeah, I've never been a big fan, a huge fan really, but.
She won you over, didn't she?
It was great.
I can't believe how amazing she was.
Where else, I mean, besides her duets with Tony Bennett, she performed somewhere within the last year to year and a half. Where it was the grown-up version of her. She wasn't wearing
a
suit made out of...
She was in Sound of Music or something. She did something like that.
Maybe that's what it was.
Where was she, guys? Do you remember? She did something...
She showed up somewhere and we were all talking about how, wait a minute, that's not the Lady Gaga we were expecting. So she has it in her if she wants to play the normal card.
Or wear the meat suit.
Or you could wear that, yeah.
But isn't that what's so amazing about her is she could play it either
way?
Yeah,
she can go back and forth between... dimensions if she wants to. But yeah, we were all watching this kind of with our mouths agape going, wow, is that a good rendition of the song? Really nice. Not an easy song to sing, but boy, she made it her own.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just to go back to some of the big...
You want to say better shows than last night?
Well, I just want to say when it all started.
But now keep in mind, you guys don't like... I don't think Steve likes them either. Coldplay. I like Coldplay. So that those first three or four songs were fine by me.
I like them well enough. It's just the sound mix of it. It just didn't sound great. And, you know, I still think it should be about a football game. You know, I'm not into the whole... The only great moment was, of all of those that I remember, was U2 when he opened up his jacket... and had the flag after the September 11th.
Yeah,
attacks.
That was impressive.
Otherwise, you know, Janet Jackson, okay.
But Prince was pretty good
Prince
a couple
was
years ago.
Fantastic.
I like that.
Bruno Mars was very good, but it's
three
not,
times.
It's not what I. It's like Marco Rubio, three times, four times.
I got to tell you, it all started in 1967. The super halftime Super Bowl shows, University of Arizona, and Grambling State marching bands. That's
yes,
when it all began.
That was a show. Remember that?
Then just the Grambling State band the next year.
Didn't they? I don't know why in my head this makes sense, but didn't Up With People do it for several years?
Yeah,
they did, right?
Which was their claim to fame, I think.
1970, though. I'm so sad I missed it. Carol Channing.
Oh, Carol, people are still talking about it.
Well, hello, football. And hello, goalpost.
People love Carol Channing.
And then in 72, a salute to Louis Armstrong with Ella Fitzgerald, Carol Channing back.
They brought her back.
And the Al Hurt and the U.S. Marine Corps drill team.
Yeah.
The
only hurt yesterday was Cam Newton.
Boy, that Grambling State band plays every year, it seems.
They must know somebody.
200 years and just a baby in 1976, tribute to America's bicentennial. Don't know what that means.
Who named it that?
I don't know.
Wow.
It's a small world, 77, including crowd participation for the first time with spectators waving colored placards on cue. I remember that. Don't you remember seeing that?
A little bit. I was still wowed by Carol Channing, even though it was 3 years later. I was still going, God, why can't they have Carol Channing back?
Up With People, salute to the big band era, 1980.
Yes. Crowd pleaser.
It's always good to have a vocal group with a tribute to the big band era.
Bebop Bam.
Wah, 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 wah.
1989, Bebop Bamboozled, featuring 3D effects. Oh, my God.
Do you remember that? You had to get the glasses at 7-Eleven, and they ran out of the glasses. Do you remember this?
No. God, they had some great ones. 1998, Something Grand, featuring 88 grand pianos, the Rockettes, and Chubby Checker.
Yes.
That's pretty awesome.
I know you say that, but if they announced that was going to be next year's show, what would you say to that? You go, oh, yay, Chubby Checker.
Is he still around?
I don't know.
Because I'd be really impressed.
I'm not sure.
1991 is when the big blockbuster kicked off. As we know it, because it was a small world salute to 25 years of the Super Bowl featuring New Kids on the Block. Yep. So that was the first real event.
Mm-hmm.
We can discuss more of these later, but we have to take a break. Then news, then Andrea Darlis, who is live from New Hampshire at the debate. The primary.
Primary.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Yes. She will be there as soon as we take a break and take care of some news right now. I got everything going at once, and I don't know what to do, so...
Can you name this tune, Wendy?
This is honestly the best version of it I could find, too.
Did you tape yourself at the Wurlitzer store?
Yes, I did. Would you like to buy an organ?
No.
We're having a sale.
Andrea, would you like to buy an organ?
No, but that's funny. It's a pipe organ. I love it.
All organs must go.
I'm expecting the little monkey to pop out of the box.
Hey, I can hear you.
All right, so you're in New Hampshire right now, the primary.
Yeah.
Boy, you got a cool little gig there.
You know, I do have a cool gig, but it's funny, Wendy. I think everybody says, hey, let's wait till it snows and then send Andrea there because there's about 4 inches on the ground here. It started out like a little mini blizzard this morning here
really?
In Manchester. Yeah.
Stephanie Menendez, our former producer and now part management, showed me the little buttons you sent her. You sent her pictures of all the buttons that are out there.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I know for a lot of people it's all about the swag, you know, the collector's items and things like that. So I have a Rubio sign, a Trump sign, but I'm telling you, Bernie Sanders has the best swag. He's got he's got Rosie the Riveter holding up, you know, her arm and the fist saying, feel the burn. He's got a pride button, you know, rainbow pride buttons for Bernie. Just his head covering the White House lawn. Very, very Cochran-esque, but very funny. You know, I definitely think he has the best swag.
Is it safe to say that all the candidates believe or want us to believe that they're all really in this? They all stand a chance tomorrow?
You know what? It's interesting because this is so spread out. I mean, I know Trump leads the field here with 34%. Cruz and Rubio tied for second, but I went to this little cafe after the show today. It's right on the campus of University of New Hampshire. So I'm having coffee, and I started talking to some of the students there, and there was a bunch for Kasich and Fiorina, too. Hmm. I mean, people you'd think are completely out of it or don't even have a chance, but a lot were undecided. You know, ABC News said this morning, four or five voters here are undecided. And one of the kids I talked to, students, said, yeah, he'll decide when he goes tomorrow, because you can go to the poll and declare, you know, Democrat or Republican, sure, right then and there.
Yeah.
And he said he'll decide tomorrow. And I said, who are you going between? And he said Kasich and Sanders. I haven't had a lot of people I've interviewed have been for Hillary supporters. A lot of Bernie Sanders. This is definitely Bernie territory.
And does it hold true, like they keep saying, that for most of the nation, Andrea, the younger voters are tending to side with Bernie Sanders? Is that what you're saying in New Hampshire?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Bill. I'm seeing so much of that, especially, you know, I would say between the ages of, 18 and 25 even. They just love him. They love, you know, they say he's the revolution. Maybe he's like the modern-day Che Guevara, but they see change with him. You know, they see most of the people that I've talked to see Hillary as, you know, they don't care really about the emails and, you know, the scandal that seems to be following her, right, plaguing her. They just see her as, you know, the establishment. You know, they kind of have the mentality of, we're sick of Bush and Clinton, we want somebody new. And I think they see Bernie Sanders as that somebody new.
It's just so funny to me, and I'm not the only one who's noticed this, that the youngest voters want the oldest guy. Isn't that kind of a strange dichotomy, that your younger voters will go, let's go with the guy who looks like my great uncle. That's the guy I want in the White House.
That is, you know, I asked one of the girls that I was talking to in Iowa, I said, does he remind you of, you know, an uncle or a grandfather? She said, not really. And she laughed and said, yeah, but, you know, now that I think about it, maybe.
Yeah.
All right. I want to know the difference between this New Hampshire primary and the Iowa caucus. Are they similar? Are they different? And can we trust the results?
Great, great question. First of all, the caucuses are much different because, you know, Iowa says they're first in the nation. They are when it comes to caucusing. New Hampshire says they're first in the nation, and they are when it comes to the primary. The caucuses are, you know, with the raucous caucus. They get, you know, everybody gets together. They're in a gym or a church or wherever it might be. We were at a museum, and they're basically arguing back and forth, kind of like the Board of Trade where they're arguing stock options. They're pulling people to different sides. And it's out in the open. It's more vocal when it comes to the Democrats. New Hampshire is a primary just like we go and vote, only it's the very first primary in the nation. So it's secret ballot. You know, you go into the voting booth. What makes it kind of cool here is that New Hampshire has the very first primary and also the smallest as well. Dixville Notch is the very first precinct that's going to open at midnight. And they expect 100% voter turnout, you guys, because there's 9 people in Dixville Notch.
Oh. And as Dixville Notch goes, so goes the nation. People say that all the time, right?
Yeah, and I was going to drive up. Yeah, I was going to actually drive up there. Someone said, oh, yeah, it's 45 minutes away. I said, yeah, no, I don't think so. It was 2.5 hours with the GPS in the snow, so I opted not to.
Wow.
Because, they
and this starts at midnight.
Midnight tonight.
Yeah, and their precinct could close in minutes. Seriously, because once all 9 people vote, they're done.
That's it.
kind of like Chicago. No.
Yeah, a little bit. Did Chris Christie help himself or hurt himself with his diatribe the other day against Marco Rubio? Is that good news for him or not?
I don't think it was the right thing to do. I mean, they're all kind of hammering on Rubio now because, you know, he has seen it. I went to a Rubio rally last night, and there were hundreds of people there, too.
Yeah.
And it was the Super Bowl, so they all turned out to support him. And I don't think Chris did himself any favors by knocking on him. We know he's young. We know he's perhaps something not qualified to be president. But then again, who is? You know, Barack Obama didn't have a ton of experience. And
right.
Look what he did. So right. Rubio, again, I think he... He's going to have a good showing. I really think he's going to have a good showing here because he's moved up very quickly, and he seems to be a favorite, again, among young people, too.
Andrea, I was listening earlier when you were on with Steve this morning, and you had spoken to Chris Christie's wife, correct?
I did, yeah, Mary Pat. She was very, very sweet.
But now she said that she was looking at polls that say they indicate that it's anybody's ball game tomorrow. Where are those polls? I can't find those.
You know, especially because Chris Christie, I mean, if you look at the latest UMass Lowell poll, had Trump ahead, and then Cruz and Rubio tied for second.
Yeah.
Then Jeb Bush and Kasich, and then Christie and Fiorina with 5% and 4%. So I'm not quite sure what poll she's looking at. But he was at a place this morning called JB's Tavern, and it's like a breakfast place, you know, at night. It turns into a bar. And voters there, people were showing up, hugging him and taking pictures with him, too. So I don't know if it was just a case of here's the candidate, let's get a selfie. But he had quite a few supporters there. He had two guys following him or who wanted to take pictures with him who were from Jersey. And they said that they came all, you know, they came from Jersey to follow him and to rally with him today.
Did you get a chance in all your travels to see Saturday Night Live and watch Bernie Sanders on SNL?
I did. It was hilarious. I saw it online. Wasn't it funny?
He was really good. I mean, it's so funny because now when I look at him, I just think of Larry Sanders. Yep. That's all I can think of.
Yep.
I feel the same way. You know, I'll tell you, Bernie Sanders, his campaign or his supporters and followers, they really have the liveliest rallies. I was at after the show today, I went into town. There's an area off of Elm Street. And it's, you know, restaurants and cafes and things like that. And that's where they were having a Bernie Sanders rally. And I took pictures of all of his swag. But he's got the liveliest people with him. He had a guy dressed up as Paul Revere, kind of wooing people, you know, kind of like the used car salesman, you know, saying, come into the lot.
Right.
Or in like a Moroccan marketplace. Come into my store. He had Paul Revere. And it's snowing like crazy here, too, you guys. So this Paul Revere character standing out in the street saying, come on to the rally, come on to the rally.
Are people still influenced by Paul Revere, though, Andrea? I know that seems like it's exciting, but...
Bill, the millennials went, who is that?
And Bernie Sanders used to work with Paul Revere at some point, didn't he? They knew each other.
They shared a hat. And I said Larry Sanders. I said Larry Sanders, and I didn't mean to. I combined Larry David and Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. To Larry Sanders.
So we should get Gary Shandling out there to get in the mix, too.
Right.
The Larry Sanders Show.
And Jeff Goldblum could play the piano as they, you know,
yes,
as he ascends up the building.
That would be lovely. Now, the people of Iowa last week treated this, you know, they put on their shiniest outfits, and there was a lot of big smiles for the cameras. Is that what it's like in New Hampshire right now? Are they enjoying their moment in the spotlight?
I really think they are. I mean, they really get into it as well because, you know, they say that they're first and they should have been first because, you know, centuries ago, that it was a scheduling conflict. That's why Iowa went first. New Hampshire says that they should have been first. But, yeah, I mean, there's an aura of excitement here. There's a lot of – it's different because it is bigger than Des Moines, so it's spread out.
Right.
I'm in Manchester right now, and that's kind of where most of the rallies and town hall meetings are. It's on a little bit larger of a scale, not too much larger, especially in Dixville Notch, but it's a bigger scale. And yeah, I think people are really psyched about it. You know, you're walking down the main drag of Manchester here, you know, the whole six blocks,
mm-hmm.
and there's signs in the stores, you know, you could tell who's supporting Trump and who's supporting Christie. So yeah, it is kind of a neat feeling to be here.
And no sales tax.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing.
How does that happen?
I can't. Every time I'm there, I can't.
Why do we still live here?
I don't know.
I know, right?
Oh, my God. That's crazy. All right. So what do you do now? Do you go take a nap so you can get up at midnight and then cover all the excitement and then report live on the Steve Cochran Show later on tomorrow morning?
Well, what I'm doing now, I went to the Bernie rally, and then I was just interviewing some of the college students. I'll probably do a few more interviews, and then I'm going to be with Ro and Judy Pye, like, doing her big story this afternoon. And then I'm going to try and hit the Trump rally tonight. That seems to be the biggest one at the Verizon Wireless Center.
Mm-hmm.
Trump's claiming that 5,000 to 6,000 people will be there. I'm thinking maybe 2,000 to 4,000.
I hope he gets out on stage on time.
And I hope so too, Wendy.
And Andrea, are you still planning on wearing your Megyn Kelly mask? Because I don't think that's a good idea.
I was not going to.
Don't
but
do
no,
it.
That's not a bad idea. I might as well.
All right.
Well, be safe. What's the specialty in New Hampshire food-wise? Like, we have pizza. What do they have?
You know, there was, I was making a list of some of the fun places. I went to this, Waterworks Cafe for more reasons than one. but I had a pistachio muffin, and then they told me to go to, there's a rum chata store. I don't think that's their specialty, but, Consuelo's, the Portland Pie Company, Skinny's Pizza, apparently is supposed to be good for pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And the Yido spot, but I think that was just a little bit biased if they were telling me to do that, you know, to go see my people, the Greeks.
Yeah, that would be good.
Maybe. Pita spot.
If you have the rum chata, may I suggest mixing it with club soda, because you won't get a lot of calories with the club soda part, and it tastes like cream soda. It's really good.
Oh, that sounds good. That's a better option, because someone else told me to mix it with Fireball or fire water.
Oh, no.
I'm thinking, no. Not unless I go to the Trump rally, right?
Then you'll need it.
Then you'll definitely need it. Well, Andrea, be safe and have a good time out there in New Hampshire. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thanks, you guys. I'll bring you some swag.
All right,
thanks,
you're the best.
Andrea
Darlis covering everything that's going on in New Hampshire for us. We'll take a quick break. Back with more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. 3-0 since the All-Star break, by the way, with a four-game homestand, and they are one of the best at home in the NHL. They're looking good.
Are we still on top?
We lead the West. Washington leads in the East. They're a little bit ahead of us, just a little bit ahead. But, boy, they're doing everything right.
How about that?
Yeah.
Best team.
Yep.
We thought last
Agreed.
Year was good.
Yeah, they look fantastic.
They do. All right. Somebody was talking, well, Andrea and we were talking about Bernie Sanders. And if you haven't seen Burn Your Enthusiasm from Saturday Night Live, find it on YouTube or wherever your fine videos are shown. You can probably go to NBC.com, too, and watch it. It is the funniest thing.
Yeah, they did
thing.
A nice job, didn't they?
So funny. You were curious as to why some of the young voters are voting for the oldest candidate.
Here's the theories that I keep hearing over and over again are, you know, he speaks of having a free school system, and I'm not positive that's a reality, but he's selling it. And then also he's a big proponent of legalizing marijuana nationwide, and I know a lot of young kids want that to happen. So my guess is
I think more adults want that to happen.
There's a good share of adults that want that to happen. Yeah. Yeah.
Kids are doing other drugs, it seems.
So if it's not either of those two things, what would it be? Why would so many young voters be drawn to Bernie Sanders?
414 has a theory. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Young voters all want Bernie Sanders because they don't know what socialism is. The idea that he's a revolutionary is pathetic. They also don't know history. They don't pay taxes. That is true. They don't pay taxes.
The parents are paying their taxes. I get it.
They don't yet have to find out. There are no jobs for them. They are not living in the real world. That's why they want Bernie Sanders.
Well, he's giving a populist message, you know, I want to do this for the little guy.
Right.
By and large, people who are just out of college are the little people. I mean, you know, they're still lower on the rung. They're looking
right.
at people who are making a lot more money than them. They're looking at the things they can't afford. And here's Bernie Sanders saying, look, the people on Wall Street are taking all the money and they're not looking out for you guys with your student loan debt and your inability to get a well-paying job, and I'm going to help you. I mean, it's only a logical...
Connection.
Sure. And, you know, and look, young people always gravitate toward, I don't want to say an unrealistic character candidate, because that's not fair, but toward, you know, a populist guy, whether it was Gary Hart in the 80s, whether it was, you know, George McGovern in 72.
Mm-hmm.
That's just young people do that, and that's just what's happening here.
Steve, he's quick to correct anybody. Whenever anybody refers to him as a socialist, he's quick to say democratic socialist.
Right.
Is there a difference there that is obvious and I'm not picking up on it? What's the difference?
Got to lose the labels, first of all. Don't you think that would help?
Well, you know, look, he chose this label.
Embraced it.
Yeah. Because he could have run as a Democrat, could be a Democrat, but he, you know, chose the socialist label. So,
right.
Is there a difference?
Is there a difference between being a socialist and a Democratic socialist?
Know, I suppose he could say that he's not a socialist he doesn't want to be associated with the Soviet Union socialists or the
right.
Nordic socialists. But
plot the Democratic?
He's closer to a Democrat than he is to a pure socialist.
All right.
Someone else has a theory, too. It's very telling that all young people want Bernie because they see something majorly wrong with this country, but the adults who have most of the wealth in this country do not. And it's weird just to hear, my son can't vote yet, only 16, mm-hmm. but it's, I like listening to what he thinks about it. And he is actually watching some of the debates and learning about things. And I have to tell you, SNL is really helping.
Well, it's very pie in the sky in many ways. I mean, it would all be great, and it will be great if he can do it. But it's, you know, and Hillary Clinton's point is that what he's saying sounds great, but it's not necessarily achievable. The younger people hearing Bernie say that want to believe it's achievable, and they're on board.
And now Bill Clinton has come out swinging against Bernie Sanders. We should explore this after the news.
Let's do that.
Right. Yes, I have a story. We have a break. Then we have news with Steve Bertrand coming up next here on 720 WGN.
Thanks, Steve. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Want to be part of the show? You can be. 312-981-7200. That'll work if you call us or text us.
All right, with Hillary Clinton trailing behind Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders in the Granite State polls, the Clinton campaign is hoping former President Bill Clinton... I don't know what's happened to me.
Bill Clinton?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Clinton campaign is hoping former President Bill Clinton, New Hampshire's comeback kid, can lend his political star power to help give his wife a last-minute boost. ABC's Meredith McGraw notes, yesterday, while Hillary spoke in Flint, Michigan, Bill Clinton hit the campaign trail and hit her rival, Bernie Sanders, and his promises of a political revolution. You can do Clinton better than I can. You should.
What do you need me to
this.
Say? Hold on a second.
Starting
I can
with that.
All right.
For her.
All right. For her, this is not about grand theories of revolution. This is about whether we can improve people's lives. He said.
I couldn't tell the difference.
At an early event in Keene, New Hampshire, Clinton told the crowd that his wife, and not Sanders, could be the one to unite people. Imagine a country where instead of demonizing categories of people, we wouldn't, Clinton said. This is the big difference. That was me.
You're doing great.
That part is me. This is the big difference between the way two candidates see the world. So they've got him beating up on Bernie Sanders. She's being kind and neutral, but Bill Clinton is coming from the side and jabbing at Bernie Sanders.
Which
he said today at an event, he goes, you know, I've got to be careful because I wish I could campaign just as a former president and not as the spouse of someone who will be in just a few months.
Bingo.
Oh.
And that's what the problem is. I don't like that he is fighting her battles. And if I was Hillary, I don't know that I'd want him doing that either. I know it makes it easier coming from him and not her.
Right.
But still, it's like, do you want your husband fighting your battles for you?
Boy, that's tough. Go on, Steve.
Well, there's never been another him,
right?
In so many ways, because
right.
I'm trying to think, you know.
That's why this is so weird. I mean, Bushes and Clintons, come on.
Well, you might have a spouse who is going to give a speech for you, but by and large, a wife isn't going to take on her husband's opponent as directly. But, you know, this guy's not just a spouse. He's a former president.
I know.
You know,
and a mostly popular president.
Yeah, most especially in New Hampshire. There's never been another him there. It's just unique sort of thing.
You think they'll go state by state and realize if Bill was popular in that state, you'll see him front and center. But if he wasn't popular, they'll keep him way in the background, won't they?
Well, we'll see because, you know, it's still a primary. So Clinton, by and large, is still very popular with Democrats.
Yeah.
Especially popular with older Democrats.
Yeah.
Some younger women are having more issues with him, I think, and that's where it'll be interesting to see where he's used. Now, Politico is reporting today that there might be a complete shakeup in the Clinton campaign, that they're not pleased with the messaging that's come out in Iowa and New Hampshire, and that after this New Hampshire vote, they might announce some big campaign changes. So we could see a complete shift in the way they're doing things.
So Hillary has fallen behind in New Hampshire?
She's fallen further behind.
Further.
You know what? There's a lot of different polls, and I know you've been talking to people about how there's a lot of undecided and things change quickly. So I've seen her coming, actually getting closer, Bill.
Oh, is she really?
Probably not within striking distance.
Okay.
But closing the gap a little bit. But yeah, she's never been ahead, I don't think, in New Hampshire.
I just have a problem with if I was Hillary and she's a strong woman,
mm-hmm.
I can't imagine she wants Bill to fight her battles for her. I found that to be interesting.
Except, like, at this stage in the campaign, she doesn't have a running mate. Like, you could easily pawn this off on whoever's running for vice president and have them be the henchmen and have them do the dirty work. But at this point, she doesn't have that. So he kind of fills that role. And I know you're looking at it as it's her husband fighting her battles, but I think the campaign looks at it as somebody else on their team.
With real star power.
With
who's
big star power.
You know, I mean, there might be people campaigning for Ted Cruz around New Hampshire right now in the same way, but without Bill Clinton's star power, so it's not getting the attention.
Steve, didn't Jeb Bush have Barbara Bush? Wasn't she taking whacks at somebody or a couple of people?
I don't know how many whacks she took, but she gave him a big boost last week. She was campaigning, and she was there in the snow, I think, on Friday, and that was the day Donald Trump's plane couldn't land because of the snow. So Jeb was tweeting out that his 90-year-old mom could hit the trail, but Trump couldn't.
That's pretty great.
Someone texted in, I don't know if you saw, why was Bill Clinton dressed like he was an extra in the Newhart show? Did you see what he's been wearing the last couple of days?
Yeah.
Like a red lumberjack shirt?
Yeah. And that's to fit the region, right? Well, I think he's... That's kind of the local flavor of New Hampshire is that sort of mode of dress. So I think.
Yeah, but do you like it when you know it's like Bruce Rauner dressing in the Carhartt jacket to go downstate. You know that can either work or it doesn't.
And it just looks funny when you're used to seeing like a teacher dressed up, and then you see them in their play clothes.
Right.
That's like what Clinton is looking like.
Yeah. Duck hunting hat has got to go.
Does he have a whistle?
I think he has outfits for all 50 states,
and
depending on where he's needed, he puts on that state's outfit.
Wait till you see him go to the Navajo Reservation in Arizona.
All right, well, this according to CNN.com about 45 minutes ago, with just hours to go before voting starts in New Hampshire, Clinton is solidly trailing Sanders in the state, with the latest CNN poll of polls average showing the Vermont senator up 14 percentage points.
All right, so that, Steve, I think that's a bigger difference than it was a couple days ago. Again, depending on the poll, but I think that's more
space,
right?
I've seen her down 20 points.
Oh, wow.
Some, yeah.
Really?
Wow. That's significant.
What is going to happen?
Well, you know, they all, no matter what happens, they all say it's a plus somehow. They find some way to spin it to say that it's a plus.
How could this be a plus?
I don't know. I just saw Marco Rubio come in third, and they were jumping up and down like they won because they, you know, because they came in third.
Yeah, that's the one to watch. Rubio might have been obliterated on Saturday.
Isn't that something?
It doesn't happen very often, something like that.
And why is Jeb Bush doing so poorly?
No one can figure that out.
I just really can't.
No one can figure that
out.
And
I feel sorry for him. He just looks like a lost soul.
I know I've told you, I don't know if it's come up on air, but the speculation that he was going to run was so great, and everybody said, boy, now this is really his to lose. And even from the time he announced it, there was just no momentum. It's the strangest thing in the world. I can't figure it out.
I just can't believe the showing he's giving.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, everyone who's doing well is attacking. They're vocal.
Right.
You know, and he's not. He's more cerebral. This isn't the cycle for that. This is the cycle of Trump, you know, or Christie.
It really is.
That's who people are reacting to.
It changed everything, and that, in a sense, is good because more people are taking notice than ever before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kids are taking notice more than ever before, in my opinion.
Right.
Because it's become a circus.
That has a lot to do with it. Now, I still saw at the end of the debate the other night, and I've talked about this every time there's a debate, how these guys rip each other to shreds for a couple of hours, and then the show's over, and they all come, they shake hands, and they smile and laugh together. But I saw that with a couple of guys. I saw that with Trump and Jeb Bush, and there's no love lost between those two guys. But again, when it was over, they came over, and it was the cordial smile and nod and shaking hands and stuff. That always amazes me. You just spent 2 hours blasting the guy, and now you guys are friends again?
And Ben Carson, again, we found out over the weekend that he did not make it on stage. So
LoJack has to give him some kind of a system. He should have a GPS system at all times.
But he looked like this lost little soul lost backstage. And Trump kind of looked that way, too.
For a little while,
it was the first time I saw a different version of Donald Trump, like, almost looking to Carson going, what do we do now?
I know.
Like, I know. He was not in control for once.
Right.
Right. It was a very different view of Donald Trump.
I thought he was going to miss his second straight debate. He missed one. I was like, all right, I know what it's like to miss one. I can just miss another one.
I don't care. Of course, he'd say it was intentional.
Right, right.
Every move is
planned.
There's
a reason. Because Ted Cruz sent him a mailer saying that the debate had been canceled at the last minute. So he got an out.
312-981-7200. Dale, if you're listening, hang on. We'll get to your calls. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Skidoobadop.
Yep, that's what they say.
All right, we are talking about all things New Hampshire right now. We have a lot of questions out there, and Bill Clinton was not really fighting Hillary's battle, but he was sticking up for his wife, who happens to be the presidential candidate.
Right.
Would that be correct?
Well, he was campaigning for her and trying to bring down the guy who's leading her in the polls.
Right.
Just seems weird. I know it's a former president, but it's her husband.
Would it bother you if it was Chris Christie's wife? I'm not sure I understand exactly your concern.
Is it better or worse? I mean,
is it because it's a man standing up for a woman?
Yes, because looking at what I know about Hillary, I'm not going to want Jim fighting my battles for me.
Okay, but would it bother you if it was Chris Christie's wife campaigning against Jeb Bush or Donald Trump?
I guess
Trump?
Not as much. Yeah, well, I don't know why.
It's not fair.
Think about it, though. This is such a unique circumstance.
Yep.
Because we've never had somebody running for president who was married to a former president. That's never been.
The best quote from Steve Bertrand, why is he doing this? And Steve said, because prior to this, there was no he.
Right.
That's the best quote of the day. Dale has called in. Hi, Dale.
Hi. I'm calling from Madison, Wisconsin.
Congratulations. I like Madison, Wisconsin.
Born and raised in Munster, moved up here after I retired. If Hillary gets the nomination, can she pick Bill as her vice president running mate? I've never heard anybody, I don't think I've heard anybody mention that.
She's made some big mistakes in the past, but I don't think she'd make that one.
And you can, I mean, I'm sorry, I did not pay attention in history class. You can become a vice president after you've been a president?
I don't think it's ever happened, but I don't think there's any kind of a rule prohibiting that. Is there, Steve? I don't remember hearing of that.
Well, now I'm showing my ignorance, but I don't think he's eligible to be president because he served two terms.
But you
no,
can't
vice
serve,
president.
But, no, I know, but to be vice president,
but it's
you
not
have to,
consecutive terms. If well, it's non-consecutive terms, you're okay.
I don't know. Is that
like
true?
Like Grover Cleveland.
I don't know, Dale. You raise an interesting question, and you make me feel like I'm not the only one who doesn't know the answer to this.
Well, I taught history and economics in high school, and I don't remember this stuff anymore.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah, you taught it. You have a bigger, you know, excuse. We just learned it. I didn't pay attention. I should have.
Yeah.
We'll look into that.
We'll see if we can find an answer for you, okay, Dale?
But to answer it, Dale, as Steve said, Hillary has made mistakes, but perhaps wouldn't do this one.
But, Steve, the codicil you just pointed out was that he's been president, so how could he go in if something were to happen to Hillary?
Right, he's not eligible.
He couldn't accept. I think that only deals with consecutive terms, and there's been a break in between, obviously.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I think you can't serve more than two full terms.
Oh, really?
That's what I think, but I mean, I might be wrong, too.
All right.
Let's get this up. Can a two-term president be elected vice president? Is that what we're asking?
Right. Essentially, yeah.
Because I think not, because to be vice president, you have to be eligible to be president.
Some have questioned the interpretation of the 22nd Amendment as it relates to the 12th Amendment. The 12th Amendment provides that anyone constitutionally ineligible to the office of president is ineligible to that of vice president. So, Steve, you're right. Because he couldn't be president again, so he can't be vice president either.
I'm not sure if the limit on two terms is consecutive.
I think it has to do with consecutive only. I'm almost positive.
The original Constitution qualifications, age, citizenship, and residency apply under the 12th Amendment to both the president and vice president. It is unclear, however, if a two-term president could later be elected or appointed vice president. Some argue that the 22nd Amendment and 12th Amendment bar any two-term president from later serving as vice president and from succeeding to the presidency from any point in the line of succession. Others suggest that this 12th Amendment concerns qualifications for service. No two-term president has later sought to become vice president since the ratification of the 22nd Amendment. The courts have never had an opportunity to decide the question.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, Bill Clinton, for example, could run for vice president. And if the president resigned, served the rest of his term, it's incredibly stupid and it should be fixed. But that's just the way it is.
All right. But
so the I'm looking at the 22nd Amendment. No person shall be elected to the office of president more than twice. And no person who has held the office of president or acted as president for more than 2 years of a term to which some other person was elected president shall be elected to the office more than once.
So it doesn't matter that it's excessive?
Yeah.
I hate to keep invoking the name of Grover Cleveland, but, you know, he's one of my all-time favorites. He was the 22nd president and the 24th president, but they were non-consecutive terms. Isn't that what allowed him to run a second campaign?
Well, he would have been before this amendment, I think, too, because this amendment came up after FDR. We could have the court decide on Cruz if he's eligible, and on Clinton it could be like a twofer.
So basically everyone running for president could not legally be president. Is that what we're learning? That's not good.
So you can serve two terms or no more than 10 years.
8 years. 10 years?
No, because if something should happen.
Okay.
Two full terms. If a vice president becomes president due to death of the president, he or she can still run for president for two terms.
Right. So the amendment says, or acted as president for more than 2 years of a term to which some other person was elected.
But realistically, she wouldn't pick him anyway.
No.
So I don't.
Boy, that would just throw everyone for a loop.
Although, you know, Joe Biden's name has come up quite a bit lately. Is that a possibility? Could a guy who's been vice president for two terms, could he then come back if he wanted to?
He could.
Oh.
He could if he wanted
to. That would be awesome.
He'd be a big plus.
That'd help Hillary big time.
Again, though, is that something she would want? She seems to be somebody who...
Well, who's she going to pick? Amy Schumer?
I don't know if she'll pick Amy Schumer.
That be a hoot?
Would be.
Teresa, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Do you know more than we do?
Yes.
I do.
Yes.
Actually, you read it out in verbatim. It's all in the election. The president cannot be elected more than two terms. If he is sitting as a vice president and something happens, he can finish that term. He can't be elected again, but he can take over the presidency in the case of a vacancy. But the verbiage says elected.
So you're saying that someone who served two terms could be vice president, ascend to the presidency, but not run for re-election again?
Correct.
All right.
And this is something that in my college ethics class, we spent about 4 weeks arguing to death.
Wow. We didn't make it 4 weeks, but Bill was going to keep it going as long as possible.
But no, seriously, it's in the verbiage of elected as opposed to serving, because the amendment deals with how a president is elected. It doesn't talk about how they serve. It talks about how they're elected.
All right, that makes some sense. Can I bring up Grover Cleveland one more time?
No, but you're right.
All right.
Aren't you?
I think I am. I think because it's non-consent. That plays into it a little bit.
I don't
bit.
Think
it
that has anything to do with it. That has nothing to do with it. The fact that
Grover
Cleveland
predated this amendment, but he would have been able to serve in that way.
Could Hillary Clinton ask Grover Cleveland to sit in and be the vice president for her?
Bill whips out the Grover Cleveland defense all the time.
Last I checked, Grover's dead.
All right.
I want to take issue with Teresa, though, because I think even if you're not elected, if you're vice president, the president dies, and
like
you
Gerald Ford, for
and you
instance.
But you serve more than 3 years of that term.
Yeah,
you can only be elected one more time.
Correct.
Can be
because that would exceed
the
10 years. Yeah,
that is correct.
All right,
that is correct.
Steve, you and I are looking unfulfilled because I think I'm more confused now. So he technically could run; he could be her vice president, and if something would happen to her, he would take over for the rest of her term.
Grover Cleveland?
Right.
No, shut up?
But there's also a midterm election that comes up. So if he gets past that, if there's a chance of more than 2 years, there's a midterm election where they would just pull a new presidential election.
Oh. All right.
Riddle me this, Batman, because 630 just says the president and vice president cannot be from the same state of the union. Thus, the Clintons who live together in the same state could not run on the same ticket.
I don't think that's true.
I don't either.
I've never heard of that.
Uh-uh.
Grover only served two terms.
Yeah, 22nd and 24th.
Sorry, Bill. Nothing to do with consecutive.
He's ripe for a comeback.
Correct.
Well, thank you, Teresa.
Teresa, you're fun.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Fun
How
and
does
smart.
She know all that? How could anyone just know all
she
that?
She just said she was having an argument with her
history class. That's amazing.
Classmates.
She knows all that. All right. A quick break.
We're late for this, just so you could prove you were right and say Grover Cleveland 10
times. I wanted to
say
Grover Cleveland a lot, and I did. We'll take a quick break, then we'll finish the show off. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder. Jump in, 312-981-7200. We're not taking any more Grover Cleveland phone calls, I'm sorry to say. This doesn't seem fair. There's a guy who died. This is a sad story. There's a man who died in North Carolina after running the Krispy Kreme Challenge. Do you know what that is? Have you ever heard of the Krispy Kreme Challenge?
No.
Here's how it works. It's a 5-mile race in which you run 2.5 miles, then you stop and you eat a dozen donuts.
For what reason? To negate everything you just did?
Yes, because life is a series of balances, checks and balances. So they figure if you're going to run 5 miles, you should certainly treat yourself to a dozen donuts. That's what you do.
Well, I do one show, and then the second show, right. I have a beer.
Right, a Falstaff, delicious Falstaff beer. That's what keeps Wendy going. So first of all, I want to say this. I'm a huge fan of the Krispy Kreme donut.
Amazing.
And I'm not blaming Krispy Kreme for anything. You know, when you run a race, you're putting your heart under some strain.
And when you eat a dozen donuts, it's kind of the same thing.
Right.
Although, I'll tell you, right. They are not standalone anymore, are they here? They came here, and now I just think you can get them in your grocery store.
I think
store.
There's still a very small, I think there's one or two. It's not like it was 10 years ago where they were
a lot of them
a lot
closed.
More prevalent. Yeah, many
and
of
we
them
were so
gone.
Excited to get them. I will tell you that those original glazed donuts, when the donuts are warm sign is on and you get a dozen donuts to bring home to your family,
yep.
There's a good chance the whole dozen's not going to make it home.
They never have.
When they're it's warm.
Never happened once.
All right, I can right. see this.
My family would always go, look, Dad bought 8 donuts for us. Yay. Don't they sell them in dozens? No, they don't. They sell them in groups of 8.
And there's like the remnants of where the other 4 donuts were.
In my car.
I didn't know, in the box. Oh, the little, you know.
Right. Right. What was there? Just blank space that they sprinkled little donut shavings in. I don't know why they would do that.
The melted icing is there in the actual ring.
Yep, yep. A runner died. This is a sad story, donut fans. A runner died after starting the Krispy Kreme Challenge in Raleigh, a North Carolina State University tradition in which thousands came out for a 5-mile race and donut feast to help raise money for a local children's hospital. This according to race organizers. Shortly after the race began Saturday morning, a 58-year-old man who has not been named began having chest pains and left the track. Organizers said in a statement he was transported to a nearby hospital where he was pronounced dead. Unfortunately, we have some sad news to share, the statement said. We regretfully confirm that a participant of today's Krispy Kreme Challenge, and I'm sure they love when their name is mentioned over and over and again in a sad statement like this, has passed away. The statement added, we are deeply saddened and wish to convey our heartfelt condolences to his loved ones.
And we've sent them a couple of
dozen them a couple donuts. Boxes of donuts to make amends. The Krispy Kreme Challenge is defined as 2,400 calories, 12 donuts, 5 miles, and 1 hour. That according to the group's website.
How many calories?
2,400 calories.
Well, I mean...
But does that take into account the calories you lose from running 5 miles? You're not going to drop 2,400 calories, but it's an almost break-even day, isn't it?
And, you know, 2,400 calories is not a ton for the whole day. So
no.
If all you ate was that dozen donuts.
Right, right. Could you eat a dozen donuts?
I'd get sugar burn after a while.
After
they're too sweet.
Three, right?
Yeah, I think maybe it's probably burning calories while running and all that, so it's...
It's a break even.
Yeah.
Unless you die. Then it's
right, well, then you just break.
All bets are off.
Again, unless you die. Thanks. Well, you are so half empty.
They should put that in the wording of the race. I remember when I was a kid, my dad would bring home a dozen... And a dozen Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, okay,
we didn't have Krispy Kremes at the time. This was the 1930s. So he'd go to see Wendell Willkie speak somewhere, and then he'd bring home a dozen donuts. And it was at the time when I was in my prime donut eating days. Six.
What age is that?
Like 10, right? Isn't that when you
10 to 12 maybe?
I used to be able to pop when I was a kid. I could have a dozen White Castles and not even blink. Like, we'd go to White Castle's, my family, and I would get a dozen. And now if I have three, that slows me up for the rest of the day. And then
your body's different than it was as a kid. You're right.
Plus, you're doing the math in your head. You know, you always hear stories like just to have one donut, you gotta burn off 800 calories or something like that. So you do the math in your head. I'm like, I'd love to be able to eat that much, but I can't spend the rest of the week working out just to balance off what I'm about to eat.
Because as you're an adult, you realize it's not worth it.
Right.
As a kid, you just want to get it in you.
Right.
It's like, I don't care.
Right. That's true.
But then, you know, you start going, is this donut like worth 1 hour of treadmill
time? Of working out. Yeah.
And then, see, as an adult, you get wiser, even you.
Right. Even me. But you can't. There's no one in the world that could point a finger at Krispy Kreme.
Oh, no. Who is?
I don't know. It's weird. I'm reading the story, and their name is in the story every half sentence.
Well, because you mentioned that he ate a dozen donuts. Why didn't you leave that part out?
I don't know, because that's the headline on it. Man dies during Krispy Kreme challenge.
I've never heard of that.
I want in. Just the donut part. I don't want to run. I just want to get a dozen donuts and call it a day.
Well, you could do a relay and have four people eat a dozen.
Right.
You could split it up. See, that'd be great.
You know, they should do something to spruce up the Olympics like this. If you throw donuts into an event, I mean, I don't care anything about most of the events in the Olympics, but if there's a donut element, then you have my attention.
You got Homer Simpson doing it.
Right. Plus, it's safer than the water in Brazil anyway.
What are they going to do? And I am seeing all the previews of the Olympic Games, and I got to tell you, I'm getting pretty excited about it.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah?
I mean, the opening ceremonies are pretty fantastic.
Sure.
I love watching the floor exercises.
Mm-hmm.
I do like watching the Olympics.
But you watch pole vault for 4 years anyway, so if it's in the Olympics, it doesn't matter to you. You're just a huge fan of the pole vault and the shot put. Those are exciting sports.
I do not watch the shot put. Or the discus.
No one does. No one does.
Some people do. But the floor exercise and the ice skating, although this won't be happening here.
Right.
But the floor exercise, that is just amazing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's coming. All right.
Everyone will be, you know, getting sick. Usually, you know, they do the floor exercise and they have the stick with the ribbon and they're going to not need the ribbon because there's going to be stuff coming out of their
bacteria. Yeah. They'll use bacteria instead of a ribbon. All right, we're going to take a quick break, then more show ahead. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We were talking Super Bowl.
The halftime shows?
Yes, and we did not get to all the big... God, there's so many... I get stuck on these slideshows.
Yeah, it's tough when you're on a website and it's all slideshows. We were talking about how I was happier with the halftime show than you were, but I'm a Coldplay fan. You thought it was spruced up a bit when Beyonce came out and Bruno Mars, certainly. But I was okay with the whole thing. It wasn't the best show they've ever done, but it was entertaining. It was watchable.
I was much more... I enjoyed it much more than I thought I would.
You did? Okay, good.
I can't find this list. Here we go. Super Time, Super Bowl halftime shows. We were talking about when the big ones really happened, and that was 1991. That's when we first saw New Kids on the Block, and that was really the spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, you had a Carol Channing before that and Up With People.
Carol Channing's always solid. I hope that they pick her for next year.
1990.
So do my kids. My kids said, why can't Carol Channing do the halftime show?
She's no longer with us.
No, she's still alive.
Not much longer.
Uh-oh.
How old is she?
Ageless and priceless.
I'm still saying hello, Dolly.
Right. She sings that to Dolly McCarthy sometimes in traffic.
So we had New Kids on the Block in 1991, and then 1992, Winter Magic, including a salute to the winter season and the Winter Olympics, featuring Gloria Estefan. Oh. Brian Boitano, and Dorothy Hamill. I don't remember that.
Quite a show.
Did they sing?
They skated and sang. They did everything. They didn't even play the second half of the game because they knew they couldn't follow that.
They left the ice on there. Right. 1993, this was it. Heal the World featuring Michael Jackson and 3,500 local children. Finale included an audience card stunt.
Now, that one was in 3D, if I'm remembering that correct. Does it say?
I don't remember the card stunt.
I thought that was in 3D.
I remember Michael Jackson.
That was the magic. They tried to do a magic trick that didn't work, right?
I don't remember that.
Elvis Prestone, the magician? Wasn't that that year?
Elvis Presto.
Elvis Presto.
Prestone, right. He did the car.
Right.
He did the auto show.
Right.
Rockin' Country Sunday, 1994. Clint Black.
Yeah.
Tanya Tucker, Travis Tritt, Winona, and Naomi Judd. And the finale included a flashlight stunt.
Oh.
They always had these stunts at the end.
Yeah, a big flashlight stunt.
Somebody
lost their car keys and they had to look for them in the stadium. It was a lot of fun.
1995, Indiana Jones and the Temple of the Forbidden Eye, featuring Tony Bennett, Patti LaBelle.
Tony Bennett was Indiana Jones? I don't like snakes. I like you cats, but I don't like snakes.
The Miami Sound Machine, and stunts including fire and skydivers. The finale included audience participation with light sticks. I do remember that one.
Yeah.
1996, Diana Ross celebrating 30 years of Super Bowl with special effects, pyrotechnics, and stadium card stunt.
Wow.
That was maybe the one.
That was Elvis Presto.
Finale featured Diana Ross being taken from the stadium in a helicopter.
Against her will. She didn't
want to go. She was tied up.
I'm afraid of heights.
That could have ended terribly tragically.
Yeah.
Though. I'm thinking about Peyton Manning, and I had just read somewhere that now it appears that he's going to have to get a hip replacement.
Yeah.
He's had so many neck injuries. He could have honestly been hit once in this game
they
on Sunday.
They could have cracked him in half.
He could have been paralyzed for the rest of his life.
I know. That's why everybody thinks this is time. Plus, end on the highest of high notes.
Oh,
you just won the Super Bowl. What better ending to any story is there than that?
None whatsoever. 1997's Blues Brothers Bash.
Mm.
Oh, God, I remember this. Dan Aykroyd, John Goodman,
right,
and Jim Belushi. Also, the Godfather of Soul, James Brown, and ZZ Top. I totally remember that.
So was this the same year that they put out a sequel to the Blues Brothers? Wasn't it Blues Brothers 2000 or something? Isn't that the name of the movie?
That might be it.
What year was that?
97, so maybe not.
Oh, so it preceded it by a little bit.
1998, a tribute to Motown's 40th anniversary, including Boys to Men, Smokey Robinson, Queen Latifah. Is she really a queen?
I don't think she's really a queen.
Martha Reeves and the Temptations.
All right, that's not a bad show.
Stevie Wonder, 1999, Celebration of Soul, Salsa, and Swing. Stevie Wonder, Gloria Estefan, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, and tap dancer Savion Glover. These are terrible when I'm reading them out loud.
Well, I don't know. Like we said before, whoever they get, there's nobody that appeals to everybody. That's
impossible.
All right,
listen to this. 2000.
Yeah.
A Tapestry of Nations, Bill. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to have Phil Collins, Christina Aguilera,
good,
Enrique Iglesias, Tony Braxton, and an 80-person choir.
Who doesn't like an 80-person choir? You wouldn't watch that? And Tony Braxton?
What has she done for me lately?
I'm so in.
2001, The Kings of Rock and Pop, mm-hmm, featuring Aerosmith, NSYNC, Britney Spears, Mary J. Blige, and Nelly.
No, I thought when Britney Spears did it, she did it on her own. Was she there more than once? Because I thought there was one show where it was just her. No, that was her only year?
Nope. U2 did 2002.
That's when Edge had the wardrobe malfunction. Am I remembering that correctly? I think we saw more of Edge than we wanted to see.
It looked like a double-edged sword. 2003, Shania Twain, No Doubt, and Sting.
Yeah.
That's a crazy mixture.
That's, yeah.
2004, you got your Janet Jackson, your Kid Rock, P. Diddy, Nelly, and Justin Timberlake.
Right.
That was the wardrobe.
Right.
Paul McCartney in 2005, Rolling Stones 2006, 2007, Prince, and the Florida A&M Marching Band. That was
one of the better shows. That was really a good one.
And I did like that Coldplay had all the kids out there. That was really sweet.
Yeah.
And that kind of made it better for me.
Remember when Prince sang Purple Rain, it started to rain for real? Like it wasn't a trick. It just started to rain almost on cue.
I do remember that.
That was excellent.
And let's round it out a list of the Super Bowl halftime shows. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers did 2008.
Mm-hmm.
They were great. Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band 2009. 2010 was The Who, which I thought was really great. I know people were like slamming it.
No, it was good. They
I had
did a
the
nice
TV
job.
Cranked. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. And then 2011, the Black Eyed Peas, Usher, and Slash.
Right. You didn't like that one?
I didn't say anything.
It was the lack of you saying anything.
Well,
I didn't like that one.
Kevin.
I'll go public with it.
Kevin.
But I
the
think
show business feud between you and Slash must end now.
It wasn't about him. I just thought the Black Eyed Peas sounded terrible.
Oh, man. You guys are hard to please.
I think they were that was one of the years that they tried to actually go live and like actually perform. It just doesn't work.
I do remember
it
that.
Just
it
doesn't
was,
work.
Yeah. Madonna did 2012. 2013 was Beyonce.
Right.
And I don't have 2014.
There was no show that year.
Oh, Katy Perry.
Last year was Katy Perry, right?
Yes.
So 2015 was Katy Perry.
So Bruno Mars, maybe 2014.
Yeah, Bruno Mars.
And now Beyonce was back. Bruno Mars was back.
Right.
And
the heavy hitters, they brought back some of the best.
Who else? You got Bruno and Beyonce, and who did the show?
Coldplay.
Oh, forgot about
you
them.
You forgot about them already?
Yep.
Wow, you guys are brutal.
I don't know.
All right, a quick break. We'll find out what's coming up next. Stay where you are, Bill and Wendy, WGN.